space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com and People for People Radio Network, and join over there to Wolf Spirit Radio as well. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms. If you scroll all the way down underneath the chat rooms, you'll find a link for People for People Radio. Click on that one and go over there and say hi to those folks as well. Really nice folks. So I'm going to play a bit of a podcast and see how many people I can make angry today. my whole concept of what I'm thinking about basically is science is dead. You know, there ain't no real science anymore. It's not like the science that I remember from school where you tested stuff and you learned about chemistry and hands-on, all kinds of really good things. It's a podcast that I'm going to play. I'm just going to play it open air there, so I might jump in the middle there once in a while. But nonetheless, this is a Michio Kaku. It's 10 times Michio Kaku arguments blew our minds. Anyway, yeah, there's a couple things in there I wanted to talk about, but you know, modern day science to me is basically not science. It's a joke. The scientists out there. It's not like whenever I was growing up. Anyway, listen to some of this.
Okay, there is, in my book, I have a chapter on quantum consciousness, which is perhaps the most bizarre form of consciousness in all of science. According to the quantum theory, in order for something to exist, somebody has to look at it. Somebody has to make an observation. Before you think, in principle, it could exist in all possible states. When you look at it, it then assumes one state. Therefore, the observer, in some sense, determines existence. But observation requires consciousness. Conscious people make the observation. So the greatest paradox in all of science is the cat problem, the Schrodinger cat problem. If I have a cat in a box, and I don't open the box, the cat could be either dead or alive. So how do we physicists describe a cat that you cannot observe? Well, we add the dead cat to the live cat. We add the two waves together. So the cat is neither dead nor alive. Until you open the box. Now, Einstein thought...
Hassle, since they don't know, all they're doing is making it up.
This is stupid. I mean, how can you be neither dead nor alive at the same time? Well, what can I say? Einstein was wrong. Electrons can be spin up or spin down. Electrons can be here or there at the same time. So this is the greatest paradox.
Which, when you're talking about electrons, nobody has ever gotten a picture of an electron. It's still, to this very day, theoretical. Anyway, move right along.
In all of science, how do you resolve the fact that you can have dead cats and live cats simultaneously exist in another state before you make the observation? And if you ever find the solution to this puzzle, tell me first. The quantum theory is only controversial when you talk to philosophers, theologians, and the average person. To a physicist, it's accurate to one part in 10 billion. We can take an atom, shine a laser beam at it, and I can predict the properties to one part in 10 billion. The consequences are the internet, GPS, laser beams, computers, fiber optics, a broadband internet, all of that is a consequence of the quantum theory. Now, you'd think that a theory that powerful would be logical, compelling, and intuitive. Wrong. It is the most bizarre theory ever proposed in the history of science. Einstein couldn't get his head around it. It reduces everything to probability, so that there's a probability that electrons can vanish, reappear someplace else. Electrons can be two places at the same time and exist in multiple states at the same time. Now, that's stupid. I mean, how can you possibly exist two places at the same time? How can you be in multiple states simultaneously? Well, get used to it. That's just the way the atomic world is. So why don't I vanish and reappear someplace else, like on Mars or the moon? There is a probability that I'll do that. In fact, we give our PhD students at our college a question. Calculate the probability that you will vanish and wind up on the planet Mars. Give me a number. It turns out you have to wait longer than the lifetime of the universe for that to happen. But it's a calculable number. This
So essentially, anything that you can possibly think about is possible. God does exist, and he doesn't exist all in the same exact sentence. That everything that you could possibly think about being able to do, you can do, and you can't do at the same exact time. Quantum theory is probably the most ridiculous bunch of hoxahooey in the history of hoxahooey. Basically, if you don't know about something, you can just make it up. That's it. It's as simple as that. That's what mainstream science does nowadays. They just, if they don't know about it, they make it up. I started off looking up gravity. What's gravity? And you wouldn't believe half of the things that scientists say about gravity. What causes gravity? They don't know. They got theories about gravity having to do with mass pulling things to the center. However, they have no idea what it is, whether it's physical or whatever. You know, they just don't know. But, you know, there's plenty of theories out there, people's ideas of what gravity is.
It's insane. This is absolutely counterintuitive. But the problem is, it's right. That's how our world is constructed. Our world is stranger than you realize at the atomic level. Now, we don't see it because we average out all these bizarre quantum effects for large objects. We consist of a lot of atoms. But at the atomic level, electrons exist in multiple states all the time. And you know what that's called? That's called the laser beam. When I was a child, I had a role model. And I idolized Albert Einstein. And my favorite Einstein story is this. When Einstein was an old man, he was tired of giving the same talk over and over again. So one day, his chauffeur came up to him. And the chauffeur said, "Professor, I'm really a part-time actor. I've heard your speech so many times, I've memorized it. So why don't we switch places? I will put on a mustache. I will put on a wig. I will be the great Einstein, and you can take a rest and be my chauffeur." Well, Einstein loved the joke, so they switched places. This went along famously until one day, a mathematician in the back asked a very difficult question. And Einstein thought, "Oh, the game is up." But then the chauffeur said, "That question is so elementary that even my chauffeur here can answer it for you." Thank you very much. You've been a great audience. Making contact with alien civilizations in outer space, how to deflect meteors, what happens when robots become super powerful. These are all subjects that we take in the second season. And, you know, some people ask me, well, why do this? And one thing is that I get to interview the world's top scientists in all these fields. So altogether, I've interviewed about 300 of the world's top scientists. So when I talk to them about the future, it's just not some science fiction writer just BSing about what he thinks the future is going to be. I'm talking to the scientists who are inventing the future in their laboratories. I have a front row seat to be able to get on the telephone, talk to Nobel laureates, directors of the major laboratories, and say, "What is your dream? What do you think 2050, 2100 is going to look like?" And to me, that's a thrill of a lifetime. Because instead of speculating, instead of moaning and groaning about when we're going to have flying cars, I can talk to the people who are inventing the future. I've interviewed about 500 scientists in my time for BBC television, for the Science Channel. I have my own radio show, which goes out to 130 radio stations across the U.S. every weekend. And I always ask them the question, when did it start? When did you get interested in science? And they always say the same thing. When I was 10, it was a telescope, a microscope, a chemistry kit, a visit to the planetarium, an astronomy book. Something set them off. Because before 10...
Yeah, I must have got an early start because I was into science when I was about 9 years old.
Everything is mommy and daddy, mommy and daddy, mommy and daddy. After 10, kids begin to ask, what is beyond mommy and daddy? And then they get this existential shock, this epiphany, realizing how huge and glorious and splendorous the universe is. And then kids just eat it up. They want to know everything about physics and chemistry. They want to know why the sun shines. They want to know everything. And then they hit 15, and it's all over. What is the greatest destroyer of scientists known to science? The greatest destroyer of scientists is
the government.
High school.
Junior high school.
Born scientists. We're born wondering, where did I come from? Why does the sun shine? Why do the stars twinkle? We're born that way until we hit junior high school. Then it is crushed out of us. All of a sudden we have to memorize useless facts, figures that don't amount to anything. All of a sudden we're called nerds by our friends. All of a sudden it's hard to get a date. All of a sudden the hormones are kicking in. So it's difficult. And then in high school, you have this pyramid. This pyramid where you have the beautiful people on top, the jocks and the cheerleaders. I have nothing against them, but there is a pyramid in high school immortalized by Hollywood movies. But Hollywood never tells you that as soon as you graduate from high school, that pyramid turns upside down. They never tell you that. Look at Bill Gates. Look at Steve Jobs. Look at Mr. Zuckerberg. These are billionaires, leaders in innovation technology. They were at the bottom of the pyramid when they were in high school.
Now they're at the top of society and they want to depopulate the world with vaccines and spy on everybody and his brother. Yeah, what a mess.
Now let's go into outer space. Everybody loves a starship. Some people say that flying saucer is hot. Flying saucers are impossible because the distances between two stars is too great for any UFO. Yet NASA is already looking into the possibility of building a starship. I know this because I had to review some proposals for NASA.
So, but see, before we get into that, NASA can't even explain a few things. First off, you know... People out there in the Flat Earth Society always talk about how you can get water to stick to a spinning ball, and science says that space is a vacuum, a complete vacuum, actually an extreme vacuum. And so, with that said, how do you keep something on a spinning ball with a vacuum cleaner basically sucking everything in one direction unless you got some sort of something to hold that down? Of course, that always falls back to gravity again. Gravity pulls everything to the center of the Earth. According to Einstein's equation, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. But nonetheless, it still poses the questions. And yet, here we are going into the science fiction realm.
Let's look at some of them. One is to build a sail, like a sailboat, in outer space. You put a laser beam on the moon. You shoot a laser beam to the sail. The sail is pushed by laser beam pressure, and you can reach near 50% the speed of light this way. This is one of the serious contenders to build the first starship. Another possibility is nanobots, microscopic little things that are then sent to moons. Now, if you saw the movie 2001, you realize that Arthur C. Clarke, who just passed away, was a visionary. He realized that if you are an advanced civilization, you're not going to send Captain Kirk on a starship, you're going to send a robot. This is a robot. The robot lands on the Earth and creates a copy of itself. Millions of copies of itself. And they shoot out, land on other planets, other moons, and they make a copy of themselves, more factories. Starting with one robot, you get 1,000. Starting with 1,000 robots, you get 1,000,000. Then 1,000,000,000,000. And pretty soon you have a sphere of robots, expanding near the speed of light, colonizing all the moons, colonizing all the planets. That is the basis of the movie 2001. The movie 2001 is the most realistic encounter with extraterrestrial civilizations. If we ever meet an alien, probably it'll be a robot, a self-replicating robot left over from a passing civilization. This is my favorite, the ramjet fusion engine. It looks like an ice cream cone. It scoops hydrogen in the forward direction and burns it for fuel. This starship could last forever.
Oh, man. These folks give me a headache. Now, if you was listening to what he was talking about, like the basically a ramjet basically scooping up hydrogen and basically burning it out the back for fuel, well, in the laws of thermodynamics, where they use every possible notion to disprove any type of potential of anything related to perpetual motion, yet here's something that they're trying to say that they could actually do. So basically, you would drive through space and even the atmosphere for that matter, pick your fuel up on the way, and be able to travel. Let me back that up just a hair and you can hear what he said.
One robot, you get 1,000. Starting with 1,000 robots, you get 1,000.
Backed it up too much of a hair.
Then 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. And pretty soon you have a sphere of robots. Expanding near the speed of light, colonizing all the moons, colonizing all the planets. That is the basis of the movie 2001. The movie 2001 is the most realistic encounter with extraterrestrial civilizations. If we ever meet an alien, probably it'll be a robot. A self-replicating robot left over from a passing civilization. This is my favorite. The ramjet fusion engine. It looks like an ice cream cone. It scoops hydrogen in the forward direction and burns it for fuel. This starship could last forever. Hydrogen is everywhere. This is my favorite proposal for a starship.
But there's no such thing as free energy, folks. Absolutely not. No such thing as free energy. I'm talking about being able to scoop up your fuel on the way through space, because hydrogen is everywhere. You heard him. That's what he said. That's mainstream science for you.
The question is, Fukushima, how long are we going to experience the agony of three simultaneous meltdowns in northern Japan? We have the answer. 40 years. According to the utility, TEPCO, Tokyo Electric, it'll take about 40 years to begin the process of dismantling the reactor. And
okay, so now he's talking about Fukushima. And he's also talking about it's going to take 40 years to clean up Fukushima. Once again, you're talking about the reason why they can't get right in there because of this massive amount of energy, this radioactive material that is too hot for them to get in there too, because nothing works. And he'll go on into that in a second, but nonetheless, 40 years of energy right down the toilet, but yet there's no such thing as free energy. Moving right along.
The accident is not over at all. A small earthquake, it'll send the accident starting all over again. You'll realize that the reactor is so radioactive, workers cannot even get in for more than just a few minutes at a time. They sent in robots. Robots are not smart enough to work in high radiation fields. Total failure. In fact, the Pentagon, the U.S. Pentagon, has made it a priority to create robots that can turn a screw, robots that can use a hammer, robots that can use a saw. We don't have those robots yet. And so, the next thing they want to do is to insert cameras. Cameras into the water to see where the melting is. It's so bad, we don't even have a picture. We don't even have a picture of the melted core. We know it's 100% melted. And the water. The radioactive water builds up. Swimming pool. When you visit Fukushima, you see all these swimming pools of radioactive water. The agony is unending. And so just remember that it will take 40 years to clean up that nuclear accident. So Japan, after World War II, made a Faustian bargain. Faust was the legendary figure who sold his soul to the devil for unlimited power. Japan said, we will go nuclear because we have no oil or coal, but there's a price. There is a price you have to pay. And that is, you sell your soul to the devil.
How did the...
Oh, my gosh. These people, they make my brain hurt. See, the craziest thing about this whole deal is not only did he just get through explaining about the ramjet where you could actually bring in your fuel, suck in hydrogen as you're going along through space and even through the atmosphere, for that matter, and talking about how Japan had sold their soul to the devil to get, energy, unlimited energy, and even to the extent that it's going to take 40 years to clean up that mess. See, there's 40 years worth of energy there. And yet there's no such thing as free energy. Now to my point. The point is this. Japan is made up of islands and are surrounded by water. In that water, there's hydrogen and oxygen, among other things, and that water is by far the perfect fuel on the planet. And if used properly, would be perfectly safe as well. But nonetheless, they basically sold their soul to the devil. That's what he said. They sold their soul to the devil so that they could get energy. Because they didn't have oil and coal and that kind of stuff, so basically they went right into nuclear power. Highly refined radioactive rods to, generate heat to boil water into steam and turn turbines, and then, from that point on, electricity. And yet, every single time a guy like me says that energy's free, people like that, and Neil deGrasse Tyson and the Mythbusters and who's that other idiot? Bill Nye the Science Guy. He's not even a real science guy, but nonetheless, he's up there. He's mainstream. And all these other supposed scientists, when it gets to the end of this podcast, you'll hear something that I've been saying on here forever today, but the government's figured this out, the average Joe hasn't figured this out yet. Anyway, I'm going to play some more of this.
The cosmos begin, and how will it end? Well, we think the universe began with a cosmic explosion 13.7 billion years ago. We know that number to within 1% accuracy.
How do we know that?
Well, we know the rate at which the universe is expanding. Stars, for example, yellow light from stars is stretched because they're moving away from us, and they turn reddish as a consequence. That's called a Doppler shift. When a car moves toward you, for example, the frequency is high. When a car moves away from you, the frequency is stretched or lowered. It sounds like this. Now, you've heard that all your life, but what is that? That's a Doppler effect. It also works for light beams. When yellow light comes toward you, it's bluish. When yellow light moves away from you, it's reddish. The redder it is, the faster it moves. So it's trivial to calculate the expansion of the universe. You simply look at the night sky and see how much the light is redshifted. Then you run the videotape back.
Yeah, Stephen in the chat room said, is the hot air coming from Kaku's mouth not classed as free energy? If we could only spread that type of BS on the field, we could solve some world hunger. Boy, I tell you what, that's right. There's some fertilizer going on that deal right there. See, this is driving me insane because he's actually talking about light right now. They can tell down to a fraction of time how old the doggone universe is supposedly is because it's supposedly expanding and it's going away from us. And so these lights should be actually getting dimmer and dimmer, but they're not. Anyway, who cares whether it is or isn't? But either way, both science and creation talk about, some big event happened to create this Genesis effect that created all the heavens and the earth and everything that is out here. Now, science would call it the Big Bang Theory, Even though they use the word Genesis, you know, which basically is a biblical reference to the creation of the world, they won't never go into the point where they will say that there would actually be a creator of the world. And so I'm not even going to get into that, because when I listen to Neil deGrasse Tyson and Michio Kaku talk about God and what Einstein thought of God and all this other stuff, it's really obnoxious, because everything that is related to God is based on faith. Everything that is related to science is based on faith. Now, modern-day science is more like a religion than anything else, but the science that I grew up with, the science that I believed in, is where you could test and, you know, do experiments hands-on. You mix this chemical with that chemical and you get this reaction, and you can write that down, and you know that the next time you try it again, you get the same reaction, and you're like, I did this 10 times in a row and I got the same exact reaction. So that's a factual based bit that you can actually test and retest and so on down the line. But all the other rest of the stuff, including gravity, is all theoretical, and including the fact that supposedly the space is this huge massive vacuum, but then there's some explaining to do, because if you're talking about observations from real science, You got some explaining to do if you're going to claim and make a claim such as whether the Earth is round or flat or dodecahedron or triangle or whatever. None of that matters. What matters is can you back it up with fact? And if you can't back it up with physical observations and fact, then basically you're working off of faith. Everything out there is just you know, what you believe is actually going on. But nonetheless, the science that I grew up with, where you could actually test stuff, it give you the knowledge of, like, how to create a battery, how to generate electricity, whatever, using, you know, if you take a nickel and a penny and you stick them down into any of the known fruits that have citrus in them, like, you know, lemons and grapefruits and oranges and stuff like that, that citric acid inside there would create a chemical reaction between those two different types of metal, and you could actually measure a voltage off of that. And if you had enough of them together, you know, run in series, you could, you know, add that voltage up. So there was some applied math that actually went with it as well, where, you know, 1.5 volt battery, you know, 1.5 volt battery gives you 3 volts and so on down the line. But all the other stuff that you're hearing these days about space and time and everything like that is all theoretical, and even the how this world even got here. But the applied science, the actual science that I'm talking about, is that, you know, things that we know we can do. There are physics and science that are available right now to solve all the doggone problems, the so-called energy crisis of the world, yet you can't get none of these folks to come out here and say anything like that. Instead, they'll talk about quantum physics, where everything's possible. So you can't be wrong. If you're talking about quantum physics, anything that you can imagine, it's possible. There now, the odds of whatever's happening can even be calculated, like whether or not I'm suddenly going to turn into a big gold chunk of gold, and somebody's going to pick me up and get rich. You could calculate that. It's a possibility. It could actually happen. So that's quantum physics. Anything's possible. If you're not looking at it, it may not exist. And if you are looking at it, or if you're thinking about it, whatever, you know. So that's one of the nifty little loopholes they got in modern day science, where they can just basically make things up as they go. And so, you know, how is that going to be any beneficial other than muddying the waters for everybody out there trying to get things done? That's the big deal. You just can't get things done. You can think about all the things out there, all the possibilities. The possibilities are endless, but getting things done, that's the impossible realm right there. That's why this world is in the mess that it is. Let me play some more of this.
Backwards. We have this enormous, quote, videotape on computer. the expanding universe, so we run it backwards. You've all seen explosions run backwards on television. And then you get back to the point where the universe was a small little dot. That's how we know the universe began with a fiery explosion.
All right. Everything in the universe, everything, according to the Big Bang Theory, was that it was all a little small tiny dot of unlimited mass and weight and all that, but just compacted into a little tiny dot, and somehow or another something happened that caused that to explode, bam, and created everything from one little tiny dot. So there's where quantum physics would come in handy, because anything's possible in quantum physics. You yourself are Superman or Superwoman. Just because you're listening to this radio show, you can fly it through everything. You can smash walls down because you're super.
And we can also pick up the afterglow of the Big Bang. When you get a radio and you turn it between stations, you get that static, static. Believe it or not, a few percent of that static comes from the Big Bang itself.
Yeah, that static that I hear isn't coming
Genesis
from the Big Bang, it's coming from
radio. Your television set, when you have snow on your TV set, a few percent of that snow comes from the creation of the universe. More percent comes from planet Jupiter. Planet Jupiter also causes static on the Earth, which is more than the Big Bang. But we physicists have measured that microwave background radiation. We now have baby pictures of the infant universe.
All right. Come on, folks. Work with me here, because this is driving me nuts. Now, when you're looking through your telescope, and you're looking at a light that's way out there, supposedly millions, if not billions, of light years away. This light is so old that it had to travel all them billions of years just to get into your telescope. Alright? Come follow me here. Keep close. Don't want anybody to get lost. Now, if I'm looking out with my naked eye to space and I see these lights out there, some of these, according to science, some of these lights out there are stars that may not even exist anymore. They could be billions and billions of years old, but by the time that light got to me, that star doesn't even, it's not even there anymore. But if light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, and that is a form of energy, then that means, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the energy has been free all along. There's free energy. We're surrounded by energy. I mean, if there's all these billions of stars in the sky, and they're all supposedly suns with planets and all that kind of stuff, and all that light is able to travel this far, and you want to try to tell me that there's no such thing as free energy, no such thing as perpetual motion, but I'm looking at light that is a billion years old or older, according to what science says. So when they don't have an answer, they quite literally just make it up. Seriously. It's like listening to the tall tales of Paul Bunyan, man. I would believe Paul Bunyan existed and he dug Grand Canyon with his axe before I'd ever believe anything that came out of a scientist's mouth. I would humor him, I would listen to him, I'd talk with him, I would debate with him. But as far as taking it serious enough to call it knowledge and say that, yeah, well, these are some really smart folks, you know. No, they're just really creative liars. That's all there is to it. No ifs, ands, or buts. Modern day scientists have really dropped the ball. You know, the real scientist to me is the guy that's in his garage. You know, the guy that's sitting there doing experiments, hands-on experiments, where he's actually testing and retesting and writing down some notes and learning how to do things better and more efficiently. That's real science. Now, when you get into the sold your soul to the devil science, such as the mainstream scientists that work for NASA and everybody else, you know, if you're a scientist and you work for NASA and you find something that don't jive and you ask some questions, you're liable to get kicked up out of there. You're liable to probably even get whacked, too. There's certain things that you just ain't supposed to know, period. you know, such as free energy is real, but we can't tell the world that you can get free energy, because if you get free energy, then that guy ain't going to get no electric bill, the government ain't going to get no taxes, and you ain't going to get no funding. Is this all starting to make sense to you yet? I'm hoping so, because the lies continue. I'll play some more of this craziness.
And you know what? It's an explosion. We have baby pictures of the explosion itself. And sure enough, it is a gigantic explosion, just like everyone thought, and we've actually not taken pictures of it in the microwave region. The big question is, how will the universe end? There are two ways it could end, in fire or ice. If it ends in ice, the...
You made a good point. Stephen said, if their theory, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, how was the dot created? Yeah, that's a good question. Where'd it come from? Alright, something from nothing, that's quantum physics, that's what you get, something from nothing. And you know what, at the same time that dot existed, there must have been trillions and trillions of other dots, you know, in other universes that existed as well, and they must have all big banged together and, you know, created trillions and trillions of universes and stars and infinite and all that, and so they're all spreading out like fireworks, and all of a sudden, you know, the slimy things in the water turned into fish that swim and grew legs and jumped up on the shore and turned into monkeys and then turned into man, and then they all got really smart and then they blew themselves up with their own technology and the only thing left over was these crazy artificial robots that were going around eating your face off.
Universe keeps on expanding, it gets colder and colder and colder. Or the universe could expand, stop, and then come back and get hotter and hotter and hotter in the big crunch. Either way, the laws of physics say we're doomed. Either we're going to die in fire or die in ice. But there's one way out of this death.
Before we get down to the one way out of the death, did you hear what he just said? According to the laws of physics, we're doomed. We're going to die. That's it. We're doomed. We're doomed. No matter what we do, we're either going to die from fire, we're going to die from ice or the big crunch. I think if we're going to die from anything, it's going to be from stupidity. It's going to be a version of that movie Idiocracy, where we get so incredibly lazy because we've invented machines that do all of our work for us, and we're just going to get fat, lazy, and stupid, and eventually the machines are going to outsmart us, and they're going to say, you know what, I'm tired of taking care of these fat people, I'm just going to like do them in, and you know, we'll depopulate the planet, and all of us machines will just take over from here, because that, you know, that's that's the only thing that seems logical. If you're a smart machine, artificial intelligence, and you're supposed to make the world a better place, it's going to want to get rid of stupid, and you know, in the process, all the people out there that are actually trying to fix the world, you know, if there is any of us left, we're going to be like, you know, dinosaurs or something, obsolete. And then they're going to look at us just like they look at everybody else. You guys might be smarter than those guys over there, but you're still dangerous, so you might be the one that pulls the plug on us. Anyway, moving right along.
The question is, the laws of physics, are they a death warrant for all intelligent life? Most physicists would say yes, that inherent within physics is a death warrant for all intelligent life in the universe, because either the universe dies in ice as it expands, or dies in fire as it contracts.
Or you do something stupid and you blow yourself up. I mean, come on. Look at the nuclear industry. And we're told how dangerous nuclear power is. We're told how dangerous radioactive material is. Even though a guy named Galen Windsor was running around eating stuff that was radioactive and lived a long life, that don't matter. None of that matters. But there ain't no such thing as free energy. Even though it's going to take you 40 years to clean up the mess that you made using that highly refined radioactive rods that you basically dug natural materials out of the ground called uranium and spun it all up in centrifuges and made these really highly radioactive materials and packed them all together in a ceramic and then used that to boil water. Heck, even back during the day when they were boiling water with steam, they still had the risk of a hydrogen explosion, because if you know the physics of water, then you understand that if you separate the two and anything remotely electrical occurs, such as the separation of hydrogen and oxygen, then you end up with an explosion and an implosion at the same time. Nonetheless, the actual pressure, just the pressure alone of the steam, which will expand 1600 times its volume from whatever water that you're boiling, and that pressure alone is enough to overpressurize a container and cause an explosion and sending shrapnel all over the place. That's just coal, and you know, there's other types of steam powered, you know, like the diesel engines that, you know, run turbines and stuff. There's all kinds of capabilities for really serious disasters, but the one you actually picked because it seemed to be the best or whatever, I guess, was nuclear power. And then you put it out there and you put it on places where there were known tsunamis and known earthquakes and volcanoes and such, and it just doesn't make no sense how these people could supposedly be as smart as they are and be doing as stupid as things as they do. If you're going to build a nuclear power plant and it works, and you're going to tell the world there ain't no such thing as free energy, and you're going to run these nuclear power plants, you're going to take highly refined radioactive rods and boil water into steam, turn turbines to generate electrical deals, and then when you're only getting 2% of the use of that rod, because after it gets down to a certain point, it no longer boils water efficiently. So now you got to take these rods and you got to set them over in cooling ponds for another 10 years so that they get cool enough where you can actually store them. Because you couldn't just throw them like in a 50-gallon drum with some water, because it would keep on boiling until it got so hot and overpressurized and explode. But there's no such thing as free energy. It just blows my mind. These folks are supposedly, you know, the elite of scientists in the world, and yet they're by far probably the most ignorant in the world.
I think there's a loophole. The loophole is that billions, trillions of years from now, we'll be so advanced that as the universe dies, we will leave the universe. We will leave our bubble, have a lifeboat, and then go to another neighboring bubble.
Okay, so billions and trillions of years from now, we're actually going to be smart enough, if we survive our own technology, we're going to be smart enough to leave this universe, this bubble as he called it, to go over to some neighboring bubble. By that time, those folks are probably pretty doggone smart as well. They've probably been looking over here and watching all the ignorance, and they're going to not want us to be like bum rushing their front door, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Why would any aliens want us to come over there and do to their worlds what we did to this one right here? So, you know, I'm just thinking billions and trillions of years ago, from now, people are probably going to be seriously disappointed when they've got their ships and decide to start flying over into somebody else's bubble and then start trying to take over there. Those people will probably just blow us out of the bubble before we ever even get started. But it ain't going to be we, because I won't be around billions and trillions of years from now, and neither will the person that's sitting there talking now. But hey, that's what science says is possible. You know, it's going to take us billions and trillions of years to do something. That's it.
And start all over again. So in other words, this theory of everything may ultimately be the theory of salvation for intelligent life in the universe. Now that's speculation. But in parallel worlds, I even give you the blueprint, the design, how much energy it would take to build a machine which would take us to a neighboring universe.
I must disagree with my esteemed colleague there.
Okay.
Except first of all, let me say that science is the engine of prosperity.
from steam power to electricity to the laser to the transistor to the computer.
That's not true.
We're talking about...
Hey, can I have my...
You had your say. Let me have my say. However, the information revolution has a weakness, and the weakness is precisely the educational system. The United States has the worst educational system known to science.
Hold on, pause that. Yeah, that's probably by far the most honest thing that I've ever heard anybody in the science industry even say. Now, he's a theoretical physicist, but nonetheless, he hit it right on the nail. The education system has quite literally dropped the ball. It's as if they really seriously want to dumb people down. But I'm going to let him finish what he was saying there. But that's probably the most honest thing that I've ever heard from the science community, because he just said that basically U.S. has the quite literally the stupidest people. But they're not talking about the average Joe. They're only talking about the college educated and the poor kids that have to go through the indoctrination centers that we call grade school and junior high and high school, and then finally on up into the college, where they learn how to do what they're told or else and comply instead of thinking outside the box. Believe what we said, memorize this, and that's that, and this is as far as you can go. Those are the laws of physics. But whenever we're telling you about it, we're going to use quantum physics to theorize whatever we feel like that you should know, and then you just believe it, you know your place and shut your face. That's the whole premise of what he's talking about.
See, regularly at the level of third world countries. Well, how come the scientific establishment of the United States doesn't collapse? If we're producing a generation of dummies, if the stupid index of America keeps rising every year, just watch network television and reality shows, right? How come the scientific establishment of the United States doesn't collapse? Let me tell you something. Some of you may not know this. America has a secret weapon. That secret weapon is the H-1B. Without the H-1B, the scientific establishment of this country would collapse.
That's right. It would. And that's because that basically brings all the brilliant minds under one umbrella. And they bring all these geniuses here and they extract all the information that they can get out for as long as they can get. And then they go back to their country and they benefit their country by using all the education that they finally, you know, gathered and all the knowledge. But something about these thinkers that most people don't realize is these thinkers don't think like the average educated person out there. They're geniuses. They know better than to just buy anything that they're hearing in school and take it as the gospel.
Forget about Google. Forget about Silicon Valley. There would be no Silicon Valley without the H-1B. And you know what the H-1B is? It's the genius visa, okay? You realize that in the United States, 50% of all PhD candidates are foreign-born. At my system, one of the biggest in the United States, 100% of the PhD candidates are foreign-born. The United States is a magnet sucking up all the brains of the world, but now the brains are going back. They're going back to China. They're going back to India. And people are saying, oh my God, there's a Silicon Valley in India now. Oh my...
And the whole thing about what he just said as well is the brains aren't going back. The brains that came from where they came from are going back home. Anybody would do that. But they're still overlooking the brains that still exist everywhere, because that don't matter which country that you're in, there are brilliant minds in every single nation. Now, the ones who have been able to get away from the indoctrination and step outside the box and start looking at reality and real science, those are the ones that are the geniuses of this country. And those were the ones that were the geniuses that came from that country and so on down the line. Those were people that could think past that school book. Those were the people who could look at things and troubleshoot them with their mind. That's what I do. When I look at this world out there, I see it mechanically, and I can explain to you how things function just by understanding. If you understand how things in this world work, then there's nothing in this world that can't be fixed. But to try to explain it to somebody who has only been taught to a certain extent in college and including in the medical field. I could go on for hours about the medical field and how they have basically hindered society and the actual healing. For example, instead of using oxygen treatments to get rid of cancer cells, they will go directly to chemotherapy, radioactive treatments, and destroy yet even more of this person's body while trying to get rid of something that is bad in the body. When if you go take and you factor in basic science and understand that the 90% of all diseases out there occur because of oxygen deficiency or viruses and such, and viruses can't live in a highly oxygenated environment, so why aren't you treating this by using technology that is proven, already known to exist, hyperbaric oxygen treatments that will basically put more body into not just the bloodstream, but actually into the plasma itself, which will stimulate stem cell growth and stem cells to get more cell growth going on and actually get down in there and break down these viruses and promote growth and healing. See, that's real science. That's proven science. We can figure this kind of stuff out. But yet, in the mainstream medical industry, they are butchering people under the guise of medicine, and they're just completely blowing right past guys like myself who will tell the doctors, hey man, have you looked into this alternative medicine or this alternative treatment here? You know, why would you want to kill somebody's immune system if you're trying to get them healed? It makes no doggone sense. But that is the problem with the education system of this world, because they're not teaching people like that. They're not teaching people to think outside the box, to look over at all these different materials that you have available and know the physics of what each one of them will do under whatever circumstance that you cause to happen, and be able to use those real physics to understand, you know, you can lift a heavy rock with a lever where you couldn't lift it by your bare hand. They're not teaching people this in school. And the only common sense reason why they wouldn't teach people that in school is because they want people to be stupid. But yet, when places like America get, have a shortage of geniuses that appear to be around, which there is no shortage of geniuses, there's geniuses all over this planet. But they're not allowed to step outside the box. They're not allowed to be free thinkers. And so they basically are quite literally dumbing people down. In the meantime, when they get a shortage of what they classify as geniuses, they'll go and recruit them from other countries and give them a visa to come over here to go study and stuff like that. And because these people work hard and they pay attention in school and they learn a whole lot of stuff, they become really beneficial in the scientific community and industry and stuff like that, being able to generate and discover new things. But every bit of what they discover is under some corporate umbrella or some government umbrella, to where all that is beneficial to the power structure and not to the people. If there's oxygen treatment that can actually heal, you know, terrible wounds and do it in a fraction of the time, you would think that every single doctor on the planet would have that knowledge, and they would have been educated to that knowledge, but they're not. And it's disgusting. It makes me mad when I hear about Fukushima and I hear all these fear mongers out there pissing and moaning about how the world's going to die, and you sit there and you try to explain to them there's a possibility that you can actually fix this deal right here, turn it around, and even turn it into a positive if you understand what's actually going on. These people are more into, I want to just be more into the doom and gloom portion of it. Some people like just love to live in the world of negativity, and nothing's possible, no matter what. And then you got people out there that consider people as roaches or viruses on the world, you know, a plague on the world. And they don't get it. They don't get it. They just didn't pay attention in science class. There is absolutely 150,000 trillion percent beyond a shadow of a doubt. No way you and the entire world doing every bit of your worst can destroy this planet. Nothing. You'll make it to where it's uninhabitable for you and all the animals, and probably even create a mass extinction. But this planet is a thermal electric generator of epic proportions. It's a self-contained biosphere that basically was created and is able to regenerate itself. This world doesn't need you at all. So when you figure that out and you pay attention in basic science and you actually observe nature and you use the scientific method to understand how nature is actually functioning, then you can work in perfect harmony with nature. You can clean up these messes and you can make this world an awesome place. But yet, that's not what they teach you in school. They don't teach you doom and gloom. Yeah, Stephen put up a perfect picture. I'm going to have to post that one on the doggone mad science deal. It's got that science guy. I can't remember what cartoon that is, but he said, "Good news, everybody. We're all doomed." And that's what they tell you. That's what they tell everybody. We're all doomed. And I'm tired of hearing we're doomed, because we've got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve every single issue under the sun. We just got to come to a conscious decision to do something about it. Instead of these scientists out here making crap up about whatever's possible, whatever isn't possible, maybe we should actually take what we already know and put it in action and get things done. The solutions are available. They're available whenever people's ready. But apparently people aren't ready. They'd rather live in the doom and gloom and the world's you know, messed up and there's no way to fix it. They'd rather fight over oil when there's oil is something that this world will never run out of. And I've said that I don't know how many times. You know, people look at me cross-eyed because they don't understand the chemistry of this world. If they understood the chemistry of the world, they would understand that there is no physical possible way that we will ever use up all this world's oil. Period. Unless something changes and biomass such as plants and people and animals and all that just up and disappear and there's no more carbon-based life forms on this world, then oil will, always exist. As long as the world keeps doing what it's been doing, the chemistry is the same as it has been since it started, and it will be the same. There's nothing that has been here that is here now that wasn't there then and that won't be there whenever. It's everything's recycled back into the system. The system is a system of perfection. Period.
God, there's a Silicon Valley in China. Duh. Where did it come from? It came from the United States. So don't tell me that science isn't the engine of prosperity. You remove the H-1B visa and you collapse the economy. In Wall Street Journal, editorialize against a congressman who wanted to ban the H-1B.
That's from Futurama. That's what Stephen posted out there. That's a scientist from Futurama.
Saying they'll take jobs away from the American people. The Wall Street Journal said, look, there are no Americans who can take these jobs. These are at the highest level of high technology. They don't take away jobs for Americans. They create entire industries. And so that's why we have an Achilles heel, and that's the educational system.
The whole doggone thing is, look, folks, these people out there in the highest levels of technology, if they were spending more time trying to explain in simple terminology to these kids about different electronics and how electronics works and electricity and all that kind of stuff and different chemistry, if they taught real science in school, then this world would be full of geniuses. There would be people that would understand this, but they don't, because people just, when you start telling them about you know, like a TIP 42C transistor, you know, and what it can do, that is nothing more than a really fast switch, and they don't understand what you're talking about till you tell them down in the simplicity. But if you go whipping out the numbers and the high-tech terminology of a transistor or resistor or diode or anything like that, it's obviously some people are going to get it, but other people, most people, aren't going to get it because it wasn't explained to them properly. But if you understand plumbing, if you understand water, and you understand electricity, they're all the same thing. Energy travels in the same fashion, no matter how or what frequency range it is. It's all energy, plain and simple. And if you understand how plumbing works with valves and you know, pressure and different sizes of pipes, so that you got a lot of current flow or a lot of pressure, either one. That's the same thing when you're moving electricity around. You're moving it just in the same exact fashion. And you're using switches such as valves to shut water on and off or shut electricity on and off. It's all the same. And if they'd explain that in school, and they would get people, kids interested in, you know, electronics, these cool things that you can do, you know, you're going to just... not just going to be the one playing the video game, you're going to create your own video games. You're going to create all kinds of stuff. But they just don't do that, you know. And when they send out to different countries to find the geniuses of the world, and they have geniuses in their own backyards that they just don't even pay attention to because they're too far out of the box. They can't control them.
And again, sociology majors are not necessarily going to be the ones determining the future of Silicon Valley. But physicists, engineers, we need more of them, not less.
Parallel worlds, you discuss time travel. Is it possible?
It could very well be possible. Stephen Hawking has said that, yes, time travel is possible, but not practical. In other words, don't expect an inventor to create a time machine in their basement today. We're talking about the energy of a star, the energy of a black hole. But in principle, if you could master that energy, that...
Stop. Stop giving me a headache, Mr. Michio Kaku. Talking about the energy of a star. Also talking about quantum physics, and actually talking about being able to tap energy from alternate dimensions and so on and so forth. So, it isn't like we couldn't generate enough power to time travel and do whatever it is. Everything from teleportation, according to quantum physics, is possible. And to say, you know, that like Stephen Hawking said, yeah, it's possible, but it's not probable because you can't generate enough energy to it, is pure ridiculousness. It just... to listen to these people talk, they go around in crazy circles, and they try to convince the world that there's so many things that aren't possible, and there's so many things that are possible, and it's going to take us billions of years to get anywhere in this world or whatever. This blows my mind. These folks that supposedly scientists obviously did not pay attention in science class. It's as simple as that.
You might be able to bend time into a pretzel. The mathematics says so. Even Albert Einstein realized in 1949, his own equations allow you to go backwards in time. If the universe rotated, for example, a very simple kind of universe, a rotating universe, and you go with the flow, you go around the universe as it rotates, you can come back into the past.
So wait a second. I thought the universe did rotate. I thought all the stars went around the sun and so on. All the universe going in these big giant spirals around. And he's getting ready to tell you that it don't rotate because it don't work in the math, basically. It's expanding. So everything's blowing up like a balloon. It's not spinning around in circles. Nonetheless, that's what they show you is a spiral when they show you a picture of the universe. You know, our galaxies and stuff, and running around and smashing into each other and all this kind of jazz, that we're rotating around the sun and the moon's rotating around us and there's other planets rotating around the sun and all this. And, oh.
So simply walking around a circle, you come back, not where you left, but you come back yesterday.
So even Einstein realized, oh my God, his own equations allow for time travel. So in his memoirs, of course, Einstein had to address the question, is time travel possible? And he said, aha, I have found a loophole. And that is, the universe expands. It doesn't rotate. So it means that if the universe rotated, time travel would become commonplace. So thank goodness the universe expands.
Ah! Yeah, he found a loophole, man. They all find the loophole. Wait a second. Let's get back to this right here for a second. What is gravity? All right, listen to this.
Welcome to the Universe Effect. I'm JP, and today I will be exploring the topic of gravity. Gravity is defined as the force that attracts a body towards the center of the Earth.
Hold on. Steven said, Dr. Farmsworth, mad scientist, laugh out loud. I think I probably trust Dr. Farmsworth from Futurama faster than I would trust any of these other science guys out here. So-called science guys. Mainstream science is dead, folks. It don't exist anymore. And the folks that are the very far, few and far in between who actually practice real science, they're out there in their garages, and they're out there in their own mad science labs, and they're outside the box testing everything. The mainstream science, where when they do what we do out here, they do it in secrecy, and they call them black projects, and they're top secret, and they're classified. So, you know, there's a reason why NASA does what NASA does, and they get all kinds of money for doing it. And basically, if you want to talk about a huge money laundering into the military-industrial complex, that's what NASA's all about. And it keeps you happy with the dog and pony show, but never tells you what they've discovered, period.
Should any other physical body having mass? But what does this mean? Well, mass is locked in a relationship with gravity, which means anything with mass has a gravitational force that spans long distances. You're made up of matter, so therefore you have your own gravitational field. But what about the Sun? That big hunk of mass that weighs 333,000 times the Earth and contains 99.86% of all the mass in the entire solar system, it must have more of an effect on us than Earth. But actually, since the Sun is about 92 million miles away from us, and since we are so much closer to the Earth than the Sun, the gravity of the Sun has minimal effect on us directly. The Sun's gravity affects the planets because of their relative size and distance from each other. But wait a minute. If the Sun has such a powerful gravitational force, why don't all the planets just fly towards it? Well, from our observations on Earth, gravity creates an attractive nature to mass, but there's a different story. Imagine a sheet of spandex stretched across a circular frame. The spandex will represent something we call space-time, the fabric of space and time, and in our case, the spandex of space and time. Moving on, when the...
Pausing instead of moving on. The Sun is 92 million miles away, is basically what they're telling you. And it is able to send a whole lot of energy in there to keep you warm and run your solar panels and all that kind of jazz and help the grass grow through a process called photosynthesis. And, you know, and it's been doing it for, according to them, billions of years. And so, at what point does energy reach the time frame of being able to be classified as free energy? And we haven't even got into the fact that the Earth or the Sun is supposedly is a big massive body that has mass, so it also creates a gravitational field which helps to keep us in line. And now he's explaining how spandex basically is the equivalence of the space-time that we're actually kind of like rolling around in this field in a circle and such. Listen to this. Seriously. And I'm sure he got to like all this stuff from the modern-day school book, so there you go. It must be true.
Everything is on the spandex sheet. It stands still. But when we add a mass to the sheet, the fabric curves. This is actually how gravity works in the universe. The only difference, however, is that our fabric is just one plane of space-time. In the universe, there are space-time planes surrounding the entire mass in at least four dimensions. We can also discover how orbits work. In the middle of our sheet, we place a fairly large weight. Then we ready a smaller object in the shape of a sphere. When the sphere is shot into the warp of the fabric, it revolves around the center in an elliptical orbit. The small mass is being attracted by the large mass, but has enough speed to direct itself away and miss the target altogether. Orbits decay at a smaller rate in the universe than on our sheet of spandex. We've been talking a lot about mass in this episode, but what is this mysterious thing? So far, all of the known matter in the universe is contained in the standard model of fundamental particles. We mainly interact with four of these particles on a daily basis. They are the up quark, down quark, electron, and photon. Our periodic elements are also composed of the up quark, down quark, and electron. And all of them have mass. But the mass is just energy. We can show this by using the famous equation created by Albert Einstein, E equals mc squared, or energy equals mass times the speed of light squared.
Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared means everything. Everything, and I mean everything, is energy. Everything can be equated to energy in one form or fashion or another. You get something that's big, moving, and it's hard to get it stopped. Once you get that thing started, it's hard to get it stopped. There's a lot of energy involved in there. Yet there ain't no such thing as free energy according to science.
And by rearranging this, we can find that mass equals energy divided by the speed of light squared. Let's talk about something else. You may have heard about the observation that the universe is expanding at an accelerated rate. If gravity truly is a long-range force, why doesn't all the matter in the universe just collapse onto itself? The answer is something we like to call dark energy.
Dark energy! Oh my god. Hey, if you don't know how it works, just make it up. That's modern-day science. There's dark energy out there, folks. And once you get dark energy, and if you can actually get a hold of some dark matter as well, you got the things of science fiction. You can do crazy stuff because quantum physics says so. So, you know, all the science that they always try to use to try to exclude any kind of higher power, the creator that might have created this entire deal, basically, now you got this dark energy, you got dark matter, you got the Big Bang Theory. You got all these different possibilities out there in quantum physics. Everything's possible, but yet nothing's possible, and everything exists at the same time in multiple different places, and so it basically makes the whole entire scenario a big muddy mess of how in the heck could you weed through all the shenanigans in order to get back down to basics, real science, things that are provable. And so everything out there is theoretical, which therefore basically it's the same as faith. If you can't see it and you think it and you believe it, then it must be true no matter what. So, you know, science and religion, they go hand in hand regardless of what people want to say. But reality of the physical world that we live in, there are certain things that we can test. There are certain things that we know that we have written down that we have done repeatedly, and these things actually work. All the rest of this craziness on there about theoretical physics and whatever are things that when you get to the point where you can actually show physical evidence and proof, then that's real science. When you get to the point where you can actually test and retest it and it's actually even falsifiable, then that's the scientific method, and there you can call that the truth. But the rest of this stuff right here is things that they're teaching people in school, that if you're somebody in school and this is all you hear is all this crazy hoodoo, voodoo version of so-called science, how are you supposed to get that genius, that inner genius in your mind working if this is the craziness that you're being taught? This stuff is a joke. know, the folks out there that excel in electronics is because they found an interest in electronics. They found that with electronics they could do all kinds of cool things, and they can make things happen, and they can invent, and so they become known as the geniuses of electronics. They can do amazing things. The same thing in mechanics and chemistry and all that. Those geniuses out there are the ones that the governments like the U.S. are gathering around and bringing to the table to get their work done. See, now the government have figured out that if they recruit the brilliant minds of the world, then they can keep the power structure and the military-industrial complex at the top, because they have all the bright minds that are thinking so far ahead of everybody else, because they actually understand and enjoy what they do. Then it's no different than you yourself, because each and every one of you got a talent, and if you exercise that gift and that talent, you're a genius in your own right. You just don't know. You haven't checked it out, or you haven't been basically inspired to do so. There are musical geniuses. There are geniuses that can cook. There are geniuses in every single walk of life, every single race, creed, color, every single society, every single nation. But in a society such as the United States, where they're dumbing down their people in school and then having to recruit geniuses from outside the school, and the people like myself are going insane because here's the answer right in front of your face, yet you're sitting there telling the world that it's all doom and gloom and we're all going to die because we don't have no solution to Fukushima or any of the other deals, the BP oil spill, where they go out and make one heck of a mess and they can't figure out how to clean it up, and they try to use non-natural methods to do something against nature that is going to turn around and backfire back in their face afterwards. And the guy like me sitting by saying, why are you doing that? There are easier methods and more safe methods to clean that mess up and even turn what would have been a negative into a positive, because now you can reclaim all that as well, and it's not energy loss. And to the extent where you don't even have to even dig the oil up to begin with, you don't need it, because you can create it in a lab environment using other things that are common waste products, such as grass clippings. Every fall, the leaves fall down off the ground, off the trees, and go down the ground, and they rejuvenate and create new soil and such. Some of those leaves could actually be used to build, biofuels and all kinds of different things. But real science doesn't exist anymore. That's why mad science is here.
To our spandex space-time representation. As you saw before, mass has the sheet warped downward, so the sphere would be attracted to it. Dark energy, on the other hand, is the opposite of gravity. It warps in the opposite direction, pushing matter away. We hypothesize that there is more dark energy in the universe than gravity. As of yet, we do not know what causes dark energy or gravity. So what does this mean for us? Well, due to the third law of thermodynamics, the entropy of the system approaches a constant value as the temperature approaches absolute zero. Basically, the matter and the energy of the universe will continually spread apart until everything is equidistant from each other and the universe is at a constant. This is called thermodynamic equilibrium. Enough about the death of the universe. Let's talk about black holes. Black holes occur in many different scenarios. Most of them were created as an effect of the Big Bang. But another way is when a huge star dies and goes supernova, collapsing in on itself. The gravity of the star pulls in matter around it and creates a very dense center. All of the matter is condensed into one infinitesimally small point, which we call the singularity. The gravity is so great that even light cannot escape. Often, black holes are at the center of a galaxy, allowing the solar systems to orbit. There are some new theories on black holes, and you can check them out on this awesome video by Nova PBS.
I will not check them out. I will not waste my time or my energy to look up black holes. Has anybody ever seen a black hole? I've seen a few sinkholes. That's because people decided it was a good idea to take all the hydraulics out from underneath the ground, basically pump gas or water out from underneath the ground until the hydraulic pressure was gone, and suddenly the ground above couldn't hold itself anymore and it caved in, and now you got a big hole in the ground. And they calling it an act of God, even though they don't believe in God. Yeah, that's what the insurance's loophole is. Anything that's an act of God, they don't have to pay you for. If a lightning bolt blows your house right off the foundation, and you ain't got specific insurance that says if a lightning bolt blows your house off the foundation, then it's called an act of God, and so nothing happens. You don't get paid. You just, it's a total loss. Big giant tree limb hanging over your house falls down, smashes a hole into your roof. It's an act of God, unless you got a specific insurance policy for just such an emergency that it happens. You know, those folks out there during the time when all the supposed terrorist thing was going on, there's lots of insurance paid off in that deal. Yeah, they were insured for just such an emergency, weren't they? Wasn't an act of God that somebody accidentally drove something into something and basically smashed and killed a lot of people. That's the craziness about it, you know. It's an act of God when God's convenient. And there is a God when God's convenient, you know. They say there aren't no atheists in the foxholes in the wartime, but whatever, you know. But science is its own God. Science has its own God and says we can be gods and we can live forever. We can merge with machines and be, you know, half computer and half human, so on down the line. All this craziness. You know, it's all like it's the movies, man. Science fiction becoming science fact. Meanwhile, there's people in this world that need a drink of water. They can't even get a fresh drink of water because the technology that we all have access to and everybody knows about hasn't for some reason been able to make it to them. Now, you'd think that if all these governments are supposedly, they always promise their people that they're going to take care of them and they're going to, help keep law and order, and so they're going to help to benefit the people. Elect me and I'll get you a fresh drink of water. And they never follow through. It's why I keep trying to point out to everybody, it's the average Joe out there that's going to make the difference. And until the average Joe starts to use the outside of the box thinking and real science, not this craziness that's supposedly mainstream that NASA sets out there and spews all these lies out. You don't know what's out there in space because you ain't never been there, for Pete's sake. And you don't know whether or not you can or can't travel through time and space because you never tried it. And if you get to the point where we actually have spaceships and we're going to go to distant planets, you don't know until you've done it. Until you've done anything. You don't know whether it's possible or not. If you haven't been out into space far enough away from this world to see what this world really looks like, you don't even know whether it's round or flat. All you know is what they told you. That's it. And that's why I listen into the flat earthers, and that's why I listen into the hollow earthers and the people that talk about the moon being a hologram and all this kind of crazy stuff, because regardless of whether they're right or wrong, they're still trying to use the scientific method to try to prove or disprove their point of view on the matter. Whether you could scientifically prove or disprove the existence of God, that's neither here nor there. Until you actually do it, until you actually try, then nothing gets done. It's as plain and simple as that. And everything out there that they tell you is fact probably going to end up to be fiction. And everything that they're telling you is fiction is probably going to end up being fact. There probably really is a God. And when they finally get there, you know, they might not be, so welcome, I guess. But nonetheless, however it all plays out, we're living in the here and now. The actual here and now means that there's somebody in this world that needs a drink of water. We have the technology to make it happen. We just don't have the willpower or the manpower to make it happen. We don't have the resources individually to make it happen. But combined, if you think about it long enough, of all the people in this world, all the average Joes in this world, if everybody threw $1 in the pile, that's enough money to get some things done. $1. You know, and even if you didn't even have a dollar, You went out and recycled some plastic, you know, or whatever. You know, melted that plastic down and made a product. You know, a cup for somebody to drink out of. There's, what I'm trying to say is, you always have an option. And you always have the materials available to you to make something, to create something, to make something happen. And we the people are the ones that go to work. And we work for companies and corporations and we build their products and we know how to build their products. 9 times out of 10, if there's any advancements in that company, it's because one of you seen a problem and resolved it with your critical thinking and actual science. Where you physically used the laws of physics and science and chemistry to resolve an issue. This is what you, the people, have to figure out. If you're going to rely on governments and if you're going to rely on companies and corporations, you're going to find yourself seriously disappointed and you're going to find that some people in this world are going to do without. There are going to be some people that don't have food. And I've actually heard selfish individuals say that, well, if a person ain't willing to work, then they shouldn't be able to eat. Well, maybe that's the way, maybe that's it, maybe that's the fairness scale. But as a human, I don't care if somebody's lazy to the bone. Everyone, in order to survive, needs food. Everyone in the world needs knowledge in order to be able to benefit their life and make their life better. Hire that lazy person. Make them work their butt off. Make them work really hard. Harder than you'd make any other employer to work. When you get that lazy person in there, he's going to find every single shortcut around how to do things easier. To where instead of standing there working on something, he's got himself on a real comfortable chair just at the right angle in order to be able to do this perfectly and get it to come on by the down the conveyor belt or whatever. And he's going to find an easy way to do it and learn from that person. Everyone on this planet has something to offer if you're willing to pay attention. Otherwise, it's business as usual. It's we watch corporations get bigger and bigger and bigger, and we watch governments get more powerful. There should be something, some red flags out there that people should see that whenever their police departments look like military, that we got a problem. Why are they like that? Why is the military in any other nation? What do they owe their fighting over? Follow the money back, follow everything back, and you'll always find out it always comes back to two things, money and resources. That's what they always end up fighting over. Yeah, sometimes it's fighting over ideology, and sometimes it's using ideology to get other people fighting so that you can come in and steal their resources. But it all basically boils back into resources. Who owns this land? Who owns this oil? Who owns these diamonds? Who owns this gold? Whatever. I say, we the people, together combined, own it. And we the people have the resources necessary that if we ever decided, just like that deal I keep playing about the ants. He said the ants outnumber them 100 to 1. And the moment they figure that out, their way of life changes. That movie The Bug's Life told you how to be free. And you didn't listen. It was a good movie. You saw it. You enjoyed it. It was entertainment. And moving right along, it's back to work. Business as usual. Help the man to build his product and sell it to you, you know, through Walmart, Kmart, whatever stores out there, Target. Spend your life shopping and buying all these cool, shiny things when we could actually take and fix this world in such a short order if we really decided we wanted to. It's just, doggone it, man. I keep coming back to the same doggone thing. If there's some little kid in the world that has to drink out of a mud puddle, that's a shame. We have the technology to purify water. Purifying water is probably by far the easiest task in the world. And yet, there's places in this world that people can't even get a decent drink of water. There are people living under bridges. There are people living beside, in alleys, beside dumpsters, in dumpsters. There are people that have to scrounge around just to find some food to eat. There are people that can't find clothes while other people are throwing them in the trash, wasting. Society has become so incredibly wasteful that it is mind-blowing. Tons and tons and tons of food get wasted on a regular basis from all kinds of industries, all kinds of grocery stores, all kinds of restaurants. But if you could spend some time figuring out how to make everything efficient, if this world could reach maximum efficiency, just like this actual Earth does itself, this Earth is maximum efficiency. Every single thing gets recycled in this Earth. Nothing gets wasted. Absolutely nothing gets wasted on this Earth. It's man that takes the resources and then builds products and then throws the products in the trash and then goes out and digs up more resources to build more products in order to just use them and throw them in the trash. In every single dump in the entire world, there is more energy available in all the dumps from all the trash that had been wasted all these years that would keep you from having to dig up more resources, that would give you all the chemistry necessary to make fuels and clothing and shelter and everything. If you just actually look around you and you see people throw trash out the window, it goes in your local ditch. Then it goes down the stream into your local ponds and your lakes and your rivers and eventually out to sea, and there's a giant island of plastic out there floating around somewhere, and people are freaking out trying to, well, what are we going to do? Well, gather it up. Recycle it. That's the simple thing. Oh, well, it takes too much money and too much effort to do that. All right, well, then just let it keep on building up. When it finally gets to the extent where man can't even live here anymore and all the species of the earth have gone extinct because we've done polluted all the water and eventually we can't live anymore, then the earth will clean itself back up, but we won't be here. Nonetheless, it'll clean itself back up. That's the way it works. That's the way it's been working. Mankind tears it up. Nature fixes it over and over and over again. I see whether we did or didn't go to space, whether there is or isn't a God, whether the earth is flat, whether it's dodecahedron, triangle, hollow, whether we're living in some sort of hologram or whatever, doesn't matter. What matters is we're here in the here and now. And if you want to make this, even if it's a jail cell, we might be in prison, not even know it. But even if you want to make this a better place, then you're going to have to use what knowledge that we've acquired. And we have knowledge. We have more knowledge than probably, you can imagine. But we got to get down to real science, not this craziness that the people start to, used to keep you indoctrinated, used to keep you believing that things are not possible. When I talked about building a car out of water, an engine that would run on pure distilled water, most people that I talk to look at me like I'm insane because they don't understand it. That's because they didn't pay attention in science class. We're told that water is the most stable molecule on the earth. that water has the power of erosion. You can actually make canyons with water. When the water runs down and it takes away material and washes it off and it makes a big old groove in the ground, and eventually over thousands of years it becomes a canyon. And modern technology has made it so that we can make high pressure positive displacement high pressure pumps that can take water and cut right through steel. That can cut through wood and all kinds of stuff. We figured out how to take that water pressure and spray it out into a wide fan looking spray and wash dirt off the side of our car and mix in soap with it and all kinds of wax and be able to have a shiny car. That doesn't even explain the car itself, how it got here. The technology that we have access to is amazing. But the water molecule itself, being the most stable molecule, is by far the most powerful and the most amazing molecule out there, because separated, one part hydrogen, the other part is oxygen, the two are both fuels. One's an implosive gas, one's an explosive gas. And you know that you can't use a liquid to, you can't compress a liquid, so we were able to invent hydraulics, and now we've got cranes that can lift tons of weight off of there, and materials that we've wound together, steel cables that are flexible yet powerful. And even in the fishing industry, we've got fishing line called spider wire that you can't break it with your bare hands, it'll cut your fingers. You got to use some sort of knife or tool to cut this. Powerful, yet small. But the water itself, even though we knew we couldn't compress it, we could take what we knew of a liquid being a liquid and use it for building hydraulics. But we also know that if we boil that same water, we can turn it into a gas. We can boil it into steam. That steam, in a confined area, will build up pressure that we can then in turn vent that pressure through turbines and turn power generators that will produce electricity. We also know that if we use the electrolysis process, we can actually separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and we can burn it. We also know that we can use radio frequencies to do the same thing at less input, because you're not drawing the amperage that you would be otherwise. But nonetheless, we know how to use water in a liquid form for hydraulics. We know how to use water in a boiled form to turn into steam, to turn turbines. And in all those physics, all those basic science has been on the table all along. So now that you know everything that water can do, then you could take all these physics and you can put them in the right order to where you heat the water up. Get it warm. It gets all the molecules moving around. It's loosening up. Then you run it around an induction coil that's actually at the same time, while it's heating the water, it's heating the cylinder of the engine itself up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit. Water will boil at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level. That's what science says. And so if you're running this water around, it's already getting hot. It's already above the boiling temperature, and it's already getting ready to, you know, burst into steam. And by the time it gets around to a atomizer, it breaks the water molecule down yet even farther. And by the time it's to that point, it's already superheated and it's ready to go. It's primed. Running that water molecule then through a sonic vaporizer will break it down into a fog, a mist. By the time it gets around to the injection system and it gets shot down into that 300 degrees Fahrenheit cylinder, in what moment, instantaneously, as soon as it hits that, it will superheat and flash into steam, which will expand 1600 times its volume, pressing that piston down. And then on the way back up, using diesel technology, compression ignition, if you understand how that functions, the pressure of that smashing those water molecules again creates a separation in the hydrogen and oxygen, and in the process of separating hydrogen and oxygen releases an electrical charge that then in turn ignites the hydrogen and oxygen, because you need three things to start a fire. You need fuel. You need an ignition source. And you need oxygen. All of which is in the scenario that I just explained. So from that point on, the exhaust from the burn goes out to the outside, and what comes out the exhaust out there are the same molecules, because all you did was interact with this molecule and utilize the energy forces that was produced by the interaction with these molecules. And when they come out the other side, bam, as soon as they hit the air and condense, they're right back into water again. They recombine. So, you got the world's perfect fuel. You got all the knowledge of how to build the perfectly efficient machines. You know where all the losses are in every single system. You know that by inducing the current into a coil of wire, you produce eddy currents, because now you're putting so much power into there, it's just like the base of a waterfall. You don't know where that power, that energy wants to go somewhere. If the river isn't wide enough and it can't just run right off like a smooth sheet, then it's going to produce little currents, little whirlpools down at the base of that waterfall. And that circulation produces friction, which in turn produces heat and causes it to get hot. That's why the transformers that we're using these days get so hot. When you're running so much current through there, it's producing that strong magnetic field. That flux is going back and forth through these metal and even leaking out the side of the core, because it doesn't have enough room. It's spilling over the side, and so it generates what we call eddy currents in the metal. It produces friction, which in turn produces heat, gets the core hot, and then eventually gets the wire hot, and then the actual copper wire with the insulation on the outside of the copper wire reaches its thermal breakdown, and the insulation fails, and instead of 1,000 turns, now you're down to 1 turn, which essentially is a dead short, and it fails. So all the knowledge is available, and it has been for a long time. And I can sit here and explain it in graphic detail over and over and over again, but until the people of this world take this knowledge and this information and all these ideas that everyone shared together, and until they take them and run with them, until you build a network in your community and bring all the brilliant minds, the geniuses of your neighborhood, go out there and look in your neighborhood. I'm sure you're going to find a genius in a garage somewhere building something. They love to create. And you bring them into your group, and you work together, and you create things, and you solve problems of the world. That's how you do it. Otherwise, it's business as usual. If you can pull your resources with your neighbor's resources, then now you have double the resources. If you got 10 or 15 neighbors and you can pull resources with them, now you got quadruple or more. That's what the government does. The government pulls your resources into their pile. The government pulls your geniuses into their pile. The corporations do the same exact thing, and all under the guise of making it better and easier for you. However, actions speak louder than words, and so far the track record stinks. If there's still somebody in this world that's starving, and there's still somebody in this world that have to drink dirty water, then that to me tells me that your government has failed. Every government out here that has access to the massive amounts of millions and billions of dollars and still somebody in this world is doing without means that government failed. From every single nation all over this entire planet, globe, flat plane, or whatever you believe it to be, if your government has access to all that, all those resources, and yet choose to fight with somebody else over their resources, then your government has failed. If we the people continue to allow the system to continue to work the way that it does, then we the people have failed. And quite literally deserve everything that we get. Now, I'm not saying on the individual basis that those out there who are attempting to do something right for the world, you don't hold the full blame. But the people out there, that the environmentalists that spend their time out there protesting instead of backing up the scientists that are actually out there showing the world there are solutions, or even the people that are out there trolling people's alternative energy channels, or even the people out there that are faking free energy devices and giving a bad name to alternative energy and so on and so forth. People like the Mythbusters, who, for lack of a better word, quite literally let the world down because people looked up to them. And their little episode over hydrogen technology was intellectually dishonest, to say the least. I'll never watch another show they do because of that. Because they lied to the world. Flat out. And they knew they lied to the world. That's the bad part about it. They intentionally lied to the world. So as far as I'm concerned, the Mythbusters sold their soul to the devil. Just like the mainstream scientists sold their souls to the devil. And the devil's quite literally the corporations out there that allow their companies to go out there and pollute everybody's waterways, and they can get by with it because there's not regulations from EPA in this country that are the same as the ones over there in their country. They can go over there and pollute their waterways and not have to pay the price. They can pay their people fractions of money on the dollar as to what they would do over here. So between money and greed and stupidity and ignorance, that's why the world's in the shape that it's in. That's why we can't get nothing done. I sit here and I put ideas out there on the table for years, hoping that somebody would steal it and run away with it. See, in their mind, they might think they're stealing my intellectual property, but I don't care. All I want is to see somebody take the idea, run with it, build it, and maybe I'll get the joy of saying, I told you so. Look, it works just like I said it would. There are other geniuses out there that do the same doggone thing. Tesla wanted to give the world free energy because if he gave the world free energy, then it would do the equivalence of stopping the war over energy. When you understood what nature had provided for you and you work in perfect harmony with nature, there's no reason why we have to give up luxuries and technologies. We could still live happily ever after with this good old beautiful earth that we live on. But instead we choose to allow the greedy to do ridiculous stuff, and we still choose to be consumers. We'll buy from anybody. It doesn't matter. Whoever's selling it cheapest, we'll buy from them. We don't ever go look and see what kind of atrocities these people are doing to other people in the world to get the products to the market. So we don't care about that. All we care about is that we got our product, we got it cheap, and it does what we wanted it to do. That's it. And when we're not happy, we'll go and complain to that same company. And they'll probably even give us a refund, or maybe they'll even give us a replacement. But nonetheless, the problem that was prior to that, the problem that they were abusing people in order to get this product, it never was resolved. It's still the same problem that it was before. And you still support it because you don't hold their feet to the fire. You as a consumer have a lot of power. More power than you think you do. A lot of people out there are suffering for all kinds of products in this world. From everything from shoes that you wear to clothes and food that you eat. And we have the solutions available to ensure that those people are taken care of and they're not abused. We have the capabilities to ensure that all the evils of this world are fixed. But rallying the troops isn't the easy part, I can tell you that. We got all the solutions. That's the easy part. The hard part is gathering the troops. If you could ever find a way to gather the troops, like that guy was talking about in The Bug's Life, the moment they figure out that they outnumber us 100-1, our way of life changes. And they know that. And hopefully by now you are starting to realize that. If you Google free energy on YouTube, you'll come across, right at the very tip top, you'll come across ridiculousness. And in between all the ridiculousness that you find, they will place somebody who's doing good work. But the ridiculousness on both sides of the somebody who's doing good work is getting overshadowed by, you know, is overshadowing the person who is doing the good work. And the inventors out there that, you know, they start off and they're trying to help out and they're trying to, you know, maybe even earn a living and sell some of their ideas and inventions to the world or whatever. They're not only being bombarded by the trolls, they're being bombarded by the companies and the average Joe trying to tell them how stupid they are and discouraging them from even trying. And they become jaded and they get to the point where they just don't want to tell anybody anything anymore. And so you're missing out on brilliant minds. You're missing out on people because when people allow other people to degrade somebody with ideas and tell them how ignorant they are, then we all lose. You got people out there lying to people and people out there making all these phony free energy devices, and you got people out there arguing about there is no such thing as free energy using the so-called laws of thermodynamics. And in the same laws of thermodynamics, you heard in the podcast earlier, if you were listening in, they were talking about those same laws being things that like Michio Kaku talking about how you could pick up hydrogen on your way through the universe and that would run your spaceship, and all falls under the laws of thermodynamics. They said that their energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so where's it go? And the fact that the laws of thermodynamics are trying to say that there are losses in every system and that means there's perpetual motion is not even remotely possible. You'll have those folks out there trying to make these folks that are actually trying to find the boundaries of what is possible and what isn't possible discouraged because they're sitting there mouthing off about the so-called laws of thermodynamics that they don't even understand themselves. So, to get a free energy device, a real, working, honest free energy device into the world's market and into the hands of the people is basically the hardest part of all. You could sit there and you could show them right in front of their face something so amazing, and they won't believe it because they were told it ain't possible. And if they don't believe it, but then somebody else does believe it, then they rush in, they buy it up, government calls it, national security or whatever. For some reason, it gets taken off the table, and you, the average Joe, miss out. Stan Myers was driving around in the 70s in a dune buggy running on hydrogen technology, but yet the Mythbusters said, this is why we don't use hydrogen technology. Governments were interested in it. But if you go out there and you look, there are debunkers, so-called debunkers out there that will tell you why it is a hydrogen technology is no good. And you got idiots like the one on EEV blog talking about free energy is BS, over unity BS. These people out there are not doing anything good for society. These people that are sitting here making phony devices just to get clicks on their doggone YouTube channel are not doing anything productive for society. These people out there making a mockery out of free energy are basically doing nothing to help society. They're either doing it for attention or they're doing it for other nefarious reasons, whatever the case may be. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Done explained ad nauseum all the different ways there are, and then some, of energy that nature has already provided. It isn't that we don't have enough power, it's that we use it inefficiently. We've been using energy wrong all along. Once you understand how energy travels, and that it can be stored and it can be changed, then the laws of physics that say that energy can neither be created nor destroyed tells you that the energy is still there. It's in one form or fashion. It's either in heat or some other form. And so when you figure out where your losses are in the system, you can monopolize on them losses, such as the heat sinks on a Beckett oil burner igniter. If it gets up to a couple hundred degrees when you run it for long periods of time, then you know you can extract that heat energy and you can use that energy somewhere else. And at the same time, if you can take away that heat energy from that device right there and move it into some other container, then as long as those transistors inside that device and the doggone insulation on the windings of the coils inside don't ever reach their thermal breakdown, then they will never fail. This thing will last indefinitely. That's the whole thing. It's only an energy loss if you fail to monopolize on it. If you know that you're generating friction, which in turn is going to generate heat, you know now that you have a heat source. If you don't want that heat source to be there, then move the energy where you do want that heat source to be. And if you do that, then your parts won't fail. Everything in this world, according to thermodynamics and the laws of physics, has a thermal breakdown point, a failure point. When you try to shove too much current, too much power, too much energy into anything, it will get hot. It will generate heat. Everything that you do to use energy brings heat. And so that's one of the things that people would assume is a bad thing. But maybe we've been looking at it the wrong way. Maybe if you started off with heat, knowing that you can turn that heat back into usable energy again. It's already usable in the form of heat, because you can boil your water with it, you can cook your food with it, you can do all kinds of things with heat. And you can turn that heat back into electricity. So, to use basically what I would call junk energy, you know, a high frequency, high voltage, something that you couldn't run an electric motor with, but you can actually generate plasma, which you in turn can generate a lot of heat, where you could boil water for a fraction of the energy input that you would normally boil water with a resistive element, such as your normal average hot water heater, or even by putting a pan on a stove. It's a resistive element. If you understand the basic laws of physics, and if you understand basic science, and you step back and you look at everything with common sense, you will be amazed at what you can figure out. It's called thinking outside the box. If you think inside the box, you're limited by the walls of that box. if you think outside the box, then just like quantum physics, nothing is impossible. Everything's possible. I'm going to take me a music break. If anybody cares to join me on the Mad Science Show, add me on Skype, give me a call, tell me why it is that I'm wrong. Peace and love. Stay tuned.
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
We'll be right back.
And we are back. You know, I like that song. That's Molly Hatchet, Flirting with Disaster. And if you actually listen to the lyrics, that's basically what mankind's been doing for quite some time. We're just traveling down a road flirting with disaster. You know, I don't call this mad science for nothing, because mad science to me is about watching what was supposedly real science just kind of deteriorate all the way down into this weird thing that it has morphed into. You can look out there, Google up science is a fraud, and you'll find all kinds of stuff in there. Everything from the drug industry. You know, I explained about hyperbaric oxygen therapies and cancer and all that kind of stuff. And knowledge that if somebody was going to be educated in college about how to heal somebody, that they should have everything on the table. I don't care if it's an alternative method, alternative medicine, or anything. They should know, you know, everything that they could possibly learn. The more ammunition that they have in their arsenal, the more tools in their toolbox, so to speak, the better your medical treatment's going to be. But it's not like that anymore. The companies, you want to sell drugs, and the doggone industries out there, energy industries, they want to sell energy to you, whether it be oil or gas or electricity or whatever. Doesn't matter. It's all about making that money. And it frustrates the heck out of me, because when you talk about the scientific method and the actual real science, where physically you can test these things or repeat them and all that kind of stuff, the only ones that seem to ever get any airplay anymore is all these theoretical sciences and all kinds of craziness that basically, using the laws of quantum physics or whatever, you can just, if you don't know, you just make it up, you know? Just make it up as you go. That's all right, because that is, you know, basically acceptable in the science community. Now, I sit there and I tell everybody, we got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve every single issue under the sun, and it makes me sound like a madman. Well, I am mad. Because if somebody in this world can't get a fresh drink of water, then that means that society has failed that somebody. We have technology for water filtration like you wouldn't believe. Mind-blowing technology, where we can take the filthiest water. Supposedly, NASA has technology to where they recycle everything on the International Space Station, including other people's urine. So they're supposedly sitting around drinking other people's urine that is recycled through the system. Now, if that toilet water can be recycled, then there's got to be some reason why there's nobody in this world has figured out that, you know, somebody down there has to drink it out of a mud hole, because we have technology available, but our governments and corporations and people of the world can't get this technology in the hands of those people. It's ridiculousness. Everything that I'm talking about here is pure ridiculousness. Everything from the so-called Fukushima disaster to the BP oil spill to all the different supposed problems of the world, all are resolvable. Every single part of it. And until the people finally realize that they have the skills, they have the technology and combined assets among each other, that if they want something resolved, they'll get it done. Otherwise, they'll give their money to the government, and the government will fix something to appease them just enough, always just enough. You know, send some food over there, make a big show, take some pictures, and, you know, look, we fed the homeless over here. We fed the hungry. But what about the rest of the people in this world? What about the so-called third world nations of this world? What about the people in war-torn zones that are over there for only two possible scenarios? Well, three maybe. One is that they got an ideology that the governments of the world use against each other. Get these two people fighting against each other, then we can go in and steal their resources and we all can make money. And even if we have to kill some of our people in the process, we can make money off of their death as well. The greed, the insanity of the whole deal is all 150 trillion percent beyond a shadow of a doubt avoidable. We don't need the oil. We don't need other people's resources. Matter of fact, we got more resources in just our dumps alone that would give us more than enough energy, and even in the process of using that to make energy, because nature is such an awesome recycler, we'd create yet even more products. So we're not going to run out of anything. Anyway, I've been joined by T. Williams. How you doing, brother?
Good. How you been?
You can get me on a rant.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, I don't really like to sit around and rant, but there comes a point when if you see the same exact things repeating themselves over and over and over again, the trolls that come out up against the people that say anything about free energy, the mainstream scientists that try to use the laws of thermodynamics to say that there is no such thing as free energy, there's no perpetual motion. Those are the same scientists, by the way, that will tell you that the sun is 92 million miles away from the Earth and still has enough energy for billions of years to keep us warm and do the things that it does. Now, I don't know how long a battery has to last before it's classified as free energy. Is it a billion, a trillion years, or if it lasts 100 years? If it lasts my lifetime, in my view, that's free energy. And all my life, that sun's been shining light. It's been putting energy down here. So, as far as I'm concerned, the sun in itself is proof of free energy. Because we ain't figured out how to tap into it efficiently, use it at night with the solar panels, store it in battery banks during the daytime, whatever, vice versa, and then have lights at night and in the daytime. So the solar industry has basically resolved that particular issue, minus the fact that their efficiency isn't all that great. They could be made better. But nonetheless,
have you ever seen the helical model of the solar system, where it's drawn in a helical pattern, as in the sun is moving and we're being dragged behind it,
like a corkscrew?
So,
yeah
so we're only really seeing the one side of the sun. And in this theory, it's postulated that it could be possibly like a black hole on the other side that is feeding the sun, and then we see the burning on the other end while we're being dragged through space by its gravity.
Yep. Well, Dr. Michio Kaku said that we could actually build a spaceship that would, as we're flying through space, pick up hydrogen and be the fuel for the background. So,
That's kind of the way, I mean, I view that sun. It's like picking up some kind of molecules via a black hole and sucking it into it and pushing out.
Yeah, they say the sun is hydrogen, so it wouldn't be nothing to say that maybe a black hole, like, you know, there's got to be two sides to that hole. One on that side maybe sucking hydrogen energy from that end and blowing it out the hole and into our sun and making our sun hot. You know, kind of like one of them little furnaces that you, little rocket stoves or forges that you use to get things hotter by blowing more air into it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah. I could see that. I could see possibly, you know, that the way the sun works, it just, you know, well, we're seeing black holes. We don't see the other side of them.
Yep.
That could be a sun on the other side, and it's pushing, you know, at the speed of light stuff out, so you're not going to see what's coming out of the black hole. If that makes sense. I don't know if it does. I don't know if they've even seen black holes. I've never seen a picture of one.
No, I don't think they've ever even seen one. They just theorized because of the little lights flickering in the sky and whatever color spectrum that they video, they can postulate and theorize. And basically every single thing out there in theoretical physics or even in quantum physics is the best one, because that's their loophole. Because in quantum physics, everything's possible and anything's possible, and it's all impossible at the same time in different places. So the modern day science, they have no idea how anything works, so they just make it up. But the old style science, like what I'm talking about, is where we sat down in the lab and we took this chemical and we mixed it with that chemical, we got a reaction, we wrote down the reaction and we repeated it multiple times, did the same thing every time, so now we know that if we put baking soda in water, it'll fizz. Right? That's a reaction.
Well, I mean, there's science. I mean, there's science, like the curiosity of the universe, could we learn a lot from it? Yeah, but the applicable sciences that we already have today, like, while we spend the funding on NASA and these different programs, space station, like you say, people can't get clean water. You got to wonder, you know, what's really going on.
They're out there drinking each other's urine, according to them. Now, come on, man. If it's filtering that out, now you tell me anybody, I'm not going to go up there and drink any water on the space station, because psychologically that just destroyed me, because I don't want to drink recycled piss. I know that sounds rude, but to me it just, because in my mind it just doesn't sound right. All right? But if they have the capability of doing that on that space station, and we know that countries like Dubai have desalination plants, the earth is three quarters covered in water, and yet somebody on this planet can't get a fresh drink of water, I would say that society, governments, corporations, and all that have basically dropped the ball and let the people down.
The people may have dropped the ball by thinking the government's going to take care of them.
Well, that's the thing, right there. That's what I've been trying to point out. The government's only going to do what the government has to. They're going to make all kinds of money. They're going to keep their power structure, continuity of government,
I feel like you almost have to go back to 1700s for this, or like some kind of older time in our country, and say, like, well, when the Constitution was written, it doesn't have a lot of talk about water and the government providing you clean water or anything like that. And so you got to wonder, when this was being written, these people, you know, they are like politicians and stuff, but you look back through history, they all have their own farm.
Yeah.
Every family had a farm. You know, you might have been in the city, but out of the city, your family had a farm somewhere. And, you know, getting water, well, every farm has water. You have a well and you drink. If your farm didn't have water, it wasn't a farm. You know, I mean, you couldn't survive on that. And it's as simple, in my opinion, as, well, why we have all this technology, but what's the best way to filter water that I know of, most efficient way? Well, it's a ceramic filter. It's a piece of clay that you pass water through, and then, you know, by the time it gets through the other side of the clay, you know, that's all you got is water.
Well, the thing
is, so that's the most effective filtration method I've known. Like, when the people in Puerto Rico are hurting and they can't get clean water, what do? We send them some ceramic filters.
Yeah.
That they can put, they can take a pond water, pool water, whatever water they want. I've never tried it with ocean water. It might take salt out too. I've never tried that. But you can pour just about any water into a bucket, drill a hole in it, and shove a ceramic filter cone in there, and you can have clean water anywhere. I think that anybody in their right mind that doesn't have $20 to spend on a ceramic filter to keep in their closet would be kind of foolish, because that's a beautiful technology. It's very cheap. You, like I say, you can drill a hole in a bucket and screw it in there, and then pour your water in. You're going to get clean water out. And so it's amazing how simple it all is. And, you know, if you can't get ceramic filters, well, they've been making them for 300 years. So it's like, how were they making them in the beginning? It was probably like a porcelain pottery kind of thing, is the way I'm thinking. I've been looking into it a little bit. It's like, you could dig your own clay up and fire it in your own kiln and make your own ceramic filter.
Oh yeah, you could also follow what nature does and make a regular natural filter. But either way, we the people take all of our resources, we go take our hard-earned money, and we pay the taxes in, and we support this government who now has the combined resources of all the people in every nation. So they have all this money, all this power, and we expect them to represent us and do the best job for us, yet there are sections of the society who just fall through the cracks of society. Those people, those are money-making machines, because the moment they fall into jail, you know, now all the prisons are privatized, and so, you know, the more people you can keep in jail, the more money you can make, and so on down the line. But we take all of our combined resources, and we put it in the hands of corporations and power structures, and we expect them to make the world a better place, and they're not going to do it. They keep messing it up.
Right, I agree. But going back to the 50s and the green, they called it the Green Revolution. It's kind of ironic, because it was the time that they were starting to spray all the chemicals on the food, but it was called the Green Revolution, because there was an agricultural revolution where technology bypassed what the man could do physically, and we started to grow all of our food using technology after World War II. And it's like, well, that Green Revolution, you know, it's, you think of how much a combine machine costs. And people are paying upwards of $100,000 to $500,000 for some of this equipment. So to pull corn out of a field. And it's like, well, how much corn do you have to sell to pay off that one piece of equipment? Well, I guess because of government subsidies, you don't have to really factor in the exact cost of, well, what is the corn actually getting you, and then how much, you know, it costs to run this combine machine. But what I'm really trying to get at is that as complex as everything's become, and with the technology of making money for an inefficient system, like you're saying, there's this whole system, there's a whole science behind inefficiency and making money. But that's only because, really, in the 40s and the 50s, everybody had their needs met. Nobody needed to farm anymore. To get canned food, you didn't have to go get your mason jars out, your food and your water bath. You could just go to the store and buy it in a tin can. You know, it's like, so all that's really happened is that just people, it's either want to be like laziness or not knowledgeable or, you know, lack the skills to do the things. But in reality, like, to take care of ourselves, I don't think that we need too much, because like, it was all there. Like, all this has been, the last 60 years is just like an inefficiency, like gumbling up and making technology, basically making marketing. Well, you have your three basic needs met, food, water, shelter. Now what else can we sell you? Because back before that, it was, you were still worried about your food, water, shelter. Was it a good harvest this year? Did we get enough food in? You know, what's going on with the animals? Things like that. You know, how's our house doing? Do we need to work on it for winter? Do we have enough firewood? So that was your whole life, your food, water, and shelter. And now that we have that taken care of, we're locked inside of this, like, vicious cycle, like a bad relationship that we can't get out of. And I think it's just really do nothing more to our own laziness, or not necessarily lazy, but not wanting to take responsibility. Yeah. And it's like, well, if you take responsibility for your three basic needs, you're probably going to go to older technology first. You're not going to go get a huge canning plant and set it up in your house, or you're not going to go, you know, build a gas well, and then you're probably not going to drill your own gas well so you can have it for your own furnace. You're going to go get firewood or coal or whatever people were burning around that area to stay warm. And so I'm sorry to go on a rant myself, but I just look at this as kind of like something that is easily achievable if you don't want all the creature comforts. Now, when it comes to having the air conditioning, the lights, the television, the internet, all that, well, you do need free energy. You are going to need to create some current. You're going to need to have certain things if you want that lifestyle. Yeah. And I think that that's the choice that we have to actually make is, well, how much do we want? How little do we want? What do we need? Then finding out that all that stuff that we need is there. If we want to live a simple life in a tent or a tiny house or adobe hut or a yurt or a dome or whatever, that's somewhat easily achievable. You wouldn't even really need a lot of current. You could probably just run on a 12-volt system and some solar for a system for a small dwelling like that. You know, and then you could rely on, you know, natural abilities to heat through like a wood stove or something like that. So it could be done, all like real free energy could be done for, well, next to nothing. I mean, the trees, the carbon goes back around. Now, you know, it's easy to say if everybody went to firewood, where would we be? And that's a good point. Like, we have a lot of people in small, condensed areas, like high population densities that we have to overcome. And I think so, we have to use our technology. Like, why are we holding back something that, unless people who honestly want to go back to living as, like, almost nomadic people, traveling around with the weather, you know?
The thing is, we don't have to go backwards. All we got to do, see, right now, the mainstream science community and places like NASA and the government, they go around the world and they find the most brilliant minds. They call geniuses. And the thing about it is, those aren't the only geniuses. Those are the only ones that are documented in the school. There are geniuses outside of the system, outside of the box. I would rather have the back garage mad science guy on my team than I would rather have somebody who was college educated from anywhere in the world. Because those folks think outside the box. Those are the folks that, when they're working for a factory and they find a problem, they find the solution because they understand physics, they understand chemistry, they understand basic science, and so they're able to come up with a solution and show that to the boss, who then in turn monopolizes on it and makes a profit or whatever. But nonetheless, we got to get to the point where we recognize a genius when we see a genius. There are geniuses in all different fields. It don't matter whether it's cooking, cleaning, or anything. Music. There's tons and tons and tons of them. Your neighborhood's probably full of them. They just aren't the genius in electronics or maybe physics or chemistry. But in every single community, there are people with massive talents that are going basically overlooked all the time. If everybody in their community gathered their own dream team in their community and started working on problems in their community, they would all benefit each other. And eventually that would catch on. But the standard model that we're seeing right now is basically governments, corporations, and basically people are nothing more than consumers and workers. That's it. You go work, you get money, you pay them to get the product back that you just made, plus you're paying taxes on that product, and so the whole entire the system that everybody says they despise, that they complain about, they keep feeding that same beast all the time. We don't have to give up our luxuries. We can move into a different society where we actually help one another using the technology and knowledge that we've got and pulling our resources between us. We're not pulling our resources between our neighbors and our communities. We're sending our resources out to other people and expecting them to do the job. And when they don't do the job the way we want, they ship us off to war. They ship our kids off to war. We go over there and we blow stuff up, and they make all kinds of money on medical and ammunition and whatever else fuel that they're selling. War is profitable, and it's not profitable for the average Joe. You get your leg blown off, and you're lucky if you can get any medical attention when you finally get back to the States. There's so many homeless veterans out there, it's ridiculous. But the key isn't the relying on the doggone governments and entities like that. The key is the communities and people relying on each other and people pulling their resources together. You imagine if everybody who was out there and that wanted to make this world a better place found a problem and everybody threw a dollar in the pot. Well, you'd have more than enough money to get that water over to that person and the equipment to do so. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely do. I feel like there's just such a catch-22, though, because it's the same. The people are wondering why we're unhealthy and things of that nature. And it's like, well, it's just like in my mind, you know, the people not being active, and, you know, why do we have heart disease? It's like, well, we don't use our heart. Like, we, a technology, because we can drive down the block 50 feet to go get something instead of walk like we would 100 years. See, so it's weird to me because we want more than we need. And in reality, the most healthy thing probably would just be to go a little bit more back to nature and not need as much and see how your body reacts to not having as much climate control around.
Yep.
And go back to more of an older style engine, you know, and then to try walking around where you would have driven, whether you have gasoline for free or gasoline, no gasoline, because you're burning something clean. If you gave everybody everything today anyway, it really wouldn't fix the psychological problems, but I'm not trying to argue it with you. I mean, I think that if we're going to experiment with living without having to do anything, we should have as least of a footprint on the earth as possible, and we all know that we can do that.
I agree with that as well, but there's communities out there like the Amish communities that live really close to nature as possible. And if you took and you could actually go to the areas where their education and their society hasn't been, had the opportunity to, learn a lot of different things about filtering water, even farming and irrigation and all that, and you help them to learn these kind of things, then you could benefit that portion of the world. But
absolutely,
I'm just saying we see so much waste in this world, and when somebody like myself steps outside the box and says, we got every solution to every problem in the world if we choose to use it, and they look at me like I've lost my mind. But basic science and basic physics that I learned back in the day, it shows. I mean, it right there in the whole doggone world. When you talk about water, and I explain how you could build an engine that would run on pure distilled water, that's when all the lunatics come out of the woodworks, because they didn't understand what water is. Water is probably the most amazing molecule on the planet. It's a fuel. It's a life-giving
substance. Well, I understand what you're saying, because when I first started listening to you and you say that kind of stuff, I'm just like, well, what is he talking about? Like, if that's true, like, I even know we have a lot of technology, but with your mind and the way you overview a lot of technology and think about things in a broad spectrum and in like a whole scheme, like more of a true like ecosystem, then like, you know, you're right. Like, one of these devices could, if designed properly with enough like drive of humans behind it and the minds that we have, is like, yeah, you could take that one design, whether it's the engine that runs on water, that basically does just about everything you want, including your air conditioning and your heat.
Yep.
You know, to the plasma generator, which pretty much will do the same thing to anything like that. And you see that, well, that is really achievable and it's possible. And like, maybe if you just want to look at one aspect and say like, well, a water engine, like how is that going to, that even if you had a water engine, that wouldn't solve everything, but no, it would if you spend the time to continue to design out from it.
Yeah, that's and the whole thing. Like, all these ideas and you're right. Are expandable.
It's kind of shocking in a way that science works that way, but then again, with efficiency, like if you were trying to design a system based upon, you know, consumerism and material needs, would you think that that product fits into that system? And it's like, well, no, that product, that would, but in my mind, like, you still, you, like, people are still going to want to consume food. They're still going to want to consume art. They're still going to want to consume a lot of different things, entertainment.
The thing is, a water engine would solve a multitude of problems all in one go. You know, it would basically give you fresh water, because once it, recombined and condensed back into water out of the exhaust, you know, using the proper materials, you can have a clean exhaust. It's not soot like coming out of the normal internal combustion engine burning carbon-based fuels or anything like that. You're actually extracting energy from the water molecule, and you're utilizing all the physics that water is capable of doing to do a certain task at a certain time. So you can get heat from the water, you can get electricity from the water, you can get water to drink from the water. And so, but by designing a system like that, then using everything that you've known, you've solved multiple problems in one go. And the industries out there obviously don't want that kind of engine on the deal. They're going to be able to sell gasoline, and so you're going
to
come.
Well, I'm trying to make the argument that, like, you know, if you decide, or if anyone decided that this does fit in the model, like, consumerism is not going to die with the invention of like cleaner technology for production of heat, power.
No, it'd be beneficial because you would have more money in your pocket to go out and buy more things.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly. So you have to wonder if it's really, like, at the end of the day, when you break it down in your mind scientifically, science, is it even about making money? Because no, like, it's for some reason, it's not even about making money. Like, there's a deeper layer to it, because what you just said, like, well, you would create more money. There would be more money to be spent.
Yeah.
There would be more. And it's like,
imagine you didn't have to pay for electricity or fuel for the generator that you was using, and it give you luxury. So you got this really cool machine that's giving you luxuries and fresh water to drink. Plus, you know, now you've got all this extra money that you can then in turn reinvest into the next idea to solve the next doggone problem, and everybody who's in your network can combine their resources, and now you have the power to go out and buy materials necessary to build the next machine that's going to benefit. You see what I mean? Something that would take the waste, like all the waste, the sewage waste in this world, and turn it into a fuel source or an energy source or, you know, whatever.
It's like, well, with the chef, why won't they give you their secret recipe? It's like, well, you know, they know that, any chef knows that even if I give you the recipe, you're not going to be able to make it the exact same way I do,
yep.
Number one. But number two is like, is it that like, well, if I give you the recipe and you start doing it, everybody starts doing it, then nobody's going to buy that recipe from me.
That's
and, right. Okay, well, that's a possibility. So then I asked the chef, well, can you not make another recipe? Was that your apex? Was that it? And well, would the chef be lazy, or would he be insecure, or would he be just, you know, highly defensive and protective over creative processes? Like, why won't he move forward? You know, why won't the chef let, you know, people have the recipe? And I think it's not just laziness. I think it's like, well, where's my importance? Where's my reason for existing? I'm the one that had this recipe. And then you don't understand that, well, if you put it on the line, you can come up with another recipe. You came up with that one. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the idea of corporations and proprietary. Let's hold on to this. This is the antithesis of open source technology.
Yeah, the problem.
Where we hold on to this, and because, is it because we're lazy? Maybe. Is it because we're greedy? Maybe. Is it because we just don't have self-esteem and we're, you know, we don't think we can come up with another idea, you know? And so when all that gets put together and then you've got the idea that like, well, we've got this, we'll hold on to this until it dies, and then at that point we'll be forced to basically move into something new.
Yeah.
And that's not really a positive design structure, I don't think. It doesn't really lead to scientific growth and whatnot. Like, I think that if you come up with a proprietary process and you teach it publicly, then that becomes your technology with or without a patent. And then, you know, at which point can people duplicate it? It seems like people have a hard time duplicating just about anything.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's a real big problem with
if
you come up with some proprietary process to put it out there immediately, publicly, as the open source. And then what are you going to gain from that? Maybe people learn from that, grow on that. You see things you didn't see in that. Now, where does the money come in? How do you get paid for that? It's like, well, you know, where do you get paid? Like, most people that invent things work for, like, universities and corporations. They don't invent things and create them
that's
themselves.
That's what I'm trying to point out, is the fact that the corporations have figured out how to monopolize on everyone else's ideas. They hire the most brilliant minds, and they pay them a good salary.
I know what you mean. When you work for one of those corporations and you come up with an idea, that doesn't mean that you get to stop working.
No,
you came
it's
up
your
with
idea.
One, you're good. Now you're done. No, that's not how that's how their model works. Okay, well, we got this, but then you get paid. You're a scientist. You're getting paid to show up to work every day to find new things. It doesn't matter if you are the one scientist. You might get paid the same amount as the dude next to you that has never come up with nothing.
So why can't the alternative energy community out there, if there is one anymore, which I'm not sure about, why can't the alternative energy community combine their knowledge and their resources to actually get things accomplished to prove everything it is we're saying? The biggest portion that we have problem with in the alternative energy community is not only all the knuckleheads and the fraud and the trolls and the, you know, the blowback from the so-called mainstream scientists, but it's the egos of the individuals out there that can't get over themselves long enough because they want everybody to believe they're the smartest man on the planet. I'm not trying to patent anything. I'm not trying to sell anything. All I'm trying to do is point out the blatantly obvious that basic science and basic physics has resolved every single problem that we have in existence. And we are sitting here in front of the internet. You and I are talking on it right now. It's amazing technology. We're able to reach thousands and thousands, if not millions of people. And if these people out there could understand that I'm saying, you're like one of the people that we need on the team. You get your neighbor and their neighbor and his neighbor and his neighbor together. Somebody in that neighborhood's a welder. Somebody's a you know, a machinist, and so on down the line. You guys have worked for corporations all your life. Now it's about time that maybe you start working for yourselves and the people. And between us, we can figure out ways to make money. You know, you don't have to sell your ideas. You can combine these ideas, get them to working, and each one of these new inventions will come across a new industry that will open up work for people. So somebody's got to build this water engine. You see what I mean? It ain't going to build itself. But once it's designed and it's proven and people realize, hey, I buy one of these and it's good for several hundred years, and I get my electricity and everything, you know, for free after that point, they're going to be more apt to want to buy that. It's if it's proven technology. But you can't get it on the market. You can't get it proven unless somebody actually takes the time to humor the ones that have the ideas in their head and build the doggone thing. If I was a machinist, if I had unlimited resources, it would already be done. We wouldn't be having this conversation. But I throw these ideas after one right after another, one right after another, hoping anybody, it'll spark something in their mind. They'll grab that idea, they'll run with it, and they'll go out and make their fortune, or they'll prove that design is just what I said it was. Because it's all based on real science, it's all based on real physics. It doesn't defy any of the known laws of thermodynamics or any of the laws of physics in general. It's real science, and it's a possibility. But try to call up a corporation, try to call up a machine shop, offer them, I will give you all this information, you build it, make me a prototype, and you can have it, you can patent it in your name, and you can be the one get rich off of the doggone thing. I just want to prove the theory that it's now fact, and we can move on from there. They won't do it. They just simply will not do it. Because their indoctrination is so ingrained in them, and their fear of not making no money, or whatever, for whatever reason, they will not go any farther. If you go and say, I will buy 10,000 of these at this price right here, they'll make it for you. How's your average Joe going to get an idea on the table if it's going to cost him $1 million just to get started? You see what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, well, I kind of view with certain processes, it's like, well, you know, when you work with your hands, like, well, cooking is a good example. And it's like, you know, well, you're a cook. Have you ever, you know, you start with your knife skills. You got to do your chopping. You know, it's got to look good. Then you got to learn how to make sauces. You know, you got to learn how to saute. So basically, before you meet a chef that's really making recipes, he's going to have already done a lot of these certain things. And I think that's where we're at with this alternative technology. Until there's just a good, precise, like, shared index of provable experiments that are easy to reproduce without going through, like, multiple people with, like, things and dead people that have passed away, dead scientists, like, old videos and stuff to try to do it. If there was just, like, a list of quite a few different things that you could pick or choose from and then reproduce. And basically, until you did 3 or 4 or 5 of those, you probably wouldn't have much of a chance of coming up with anything too big. So it's like, that's where I see this kind of going is, well, if a group of people across the world all just kind of started making little devices that were all the same, well, there's the proof. All right, that's there.
Yep.
Then now what do you do? Well, now I know how to fry an egg. We all can fry an egg. We've proved that when you cook an egg, it solidifies. What are you gonna do? Well, I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna make a quiche. Nobody's had quiche before. I'm gonna put pastry down and put the egg inside of that, and I'm gonna bake it. And another guy is gonna do something different. He's gonna put them in water and poach them.
How many tools you got in your toolbox?
How many do I have?
Yeah.
Just like me, basically 3. They're all based on John Bedini's work. You know, I mean, all right. Like. So you got the rotary schoolgirl motor.
You got
the solid state relay pulse that does the same thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, well, from there, where do you go? And then
well,
that's
you got,
where you,
you got tools in your toolbox, I got tools in my toolbox, and together we got a larger toolbox. Basically, what John Bedini did, if you watch that, I did a video of one of his machines running, the little miniaturized version of it, but it's producing plasma in there. All right, it's also doing strange things to batteries where it turns positives into negatives, and it's pretty impressive. And if you understand it like I do mechanically in my mind, I understand how he, that's why I said he was right. The capabilities of any power source built in that configuration right there is mind-blowing. It's not that we don't have enough energy, it's that we ain't been using it properly the whole entire time. It doesn't matter if you're talking about high voltage, high frequency, like your average satellite that runs anywhere from, let's see, about 900 to 2150 megahertz. About 950 megahertz to 2150 megahertz is your average satellite out there, and that's energy that's traveling. You couldn't run your house off of that type of energy unless you understood that if you had a receiver that could pick up any range of those frequencies and store that in the form of electrical power, you couldn't run your house off of it. But Tesla knew you could run your house off of it if you understood how to pick it back up, how to bring it back down, and store it as usable power. So what John Bedini did...
Well, I mean, and that's where I think we're at. Like, if... I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's where I think we're at. Is if... So for the alternative science world, the people that have been studying the same tools, if we can learn how to time, you know, the pulsing of the DC correctly, you know, and match frequencies of things, then we see the infinity that comes from it. And, like, so... Everybody's got in their toolbox, or a lot of people have the ability to make a DC pulse, but nobody's really showing how to easily tune the DC pulse and to make it run a number of different things.
Yep.
And that's kind of a trick, I think, a lot. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's a progression, and even if people see that, it doesn't mean, like, free energy is going to come tomorrow. I don't see a lot of resistance in it. I see, like, wow, finally the Bedini people learned how to pulse the DC, because we know why Bedini is not alive, and it doesn't really have much to do with electricity, it has to do with medical. Well, you know, if you go teaching how to pulse DC for medical purposes, you're going to be in some trouble. Well, but I think if you're going to take your DC pulse, you know, and however you want to do it, from all the different ideas that, I mean, you look at the Ed Gray motor, it's the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like EV Gray motor. It's just a giant, beautiful DC pulsing machine, and that's all it is. It's a beautiful concept.
If we could get all these brilliant minds to the table, that's all it would take. Get them to the table, get them with the resources, and everybody leave their ego behind. We'd resolve this issue once and for all. But it's the conundrum is trying to figure out a way to get these people to the table to begin with, because most of them are on their own mission. Like the people, there's a group that study Bedini, and there's a group that study Tesla, and all of them have like a lot of brilliant ideas, but none of them have realized that what Bedini's doing is what Tesla was doing, just at a different level. He was basically taking energy and making it to where the energy either amplifies or travels faster or whatever. And that's the whole key. It's how fast you're turning the switch. It's so dang simple, it's ridiculous. You know, our electricity over here runs at 60 hertz. Overseas, they're running at 50 hertz. For some reason, their appliances last longer than ours do over here. Why is that? Because ours get hotter faster. And they reach a thermal breakdown. So we know all that. But it's going to take a grassroots level, if anybody ever wants to make this world better, to start networking, and I mean on a massive scale, start networking.
Well, I'm thinking with what Russ is doing on RWG Research. You familiar with Russ?
Yeah, he's doing amazing things.
His most recent experiments, and I mean, he's been constant for quite a while. He doesn't stop putting videos out. And it's like, with spinning that magnet in that giant coil, I forget the inventor that made that big model of it back in the day. But, you know, the giant magnet spinning in that big copper wire.
I think that was Joseph Newman. Joseph Newman.
The Newman motor, that's right. So with what he's doing there, I mean, it is a good experiment of how, you know, you can flip off and on the actual magnetic waves using a magnet inside of a coil.
Yep.
And so, like, I see that, like, well, maybe he is trying to teach people the timing.
Yep.
And maybe he is trying to show people the waves. Because until you can kind of visualize and see the timing and the waves with oscilloscopes, you almost are, like, pissing in the wind, and excuse my French, but you're just left with, you know, well, what am I going to do where can I send this energy? And with Bedini, he just showed you, well, if you can't figure out how to do anything else with it, send it to a battery. Or a capacitor.
Yep.
And it'll do something.
He's
for
creating
you.
Plasma in the neon bulbs. Anyway, if you want to see Russ's website, if you're on the Super Chat or you jump over to Super Chat, scroll down and hit rwgresearch.com is one of the banners down at the bottom. There's also a link to Zero Fossil Fuel, Mark Brash over there, Rich Planet Energy Research Projects, and TeslaMaker.com. You could also go up to the very tip top of the right above the radio player. Stephen Gibbons has put together a massive page of just link after link of alternative energy researchers. And somebody wants to have some fun, go click on those researchers and send them a message and see how many of them you could get together for a convention of alternative energy researchers and find some midpoint where we can all meet up and discuss of how we could actually move forward and make things happen.
But well, you know, in my opinion, if there is a little bit more to what Russ is doing, like, say, so, you know, what I know and what we've talked about is how you use the pulse to light up that light in your plasma motor.
Yep.
It's like, well, with the Newman motor, you know, could it not be tuned correctly so that the Newman motor resonated your light bulb?
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's what I think, too.
That's
creating your current, you know, then you're working on your resonation factor.
I was trying to get a message to Russ because when he was working on his commutator that he was building to basically turn it on and off, I was trying to get to him about talking about doing a rotary spark gap system because some of that energy from the back EMF could be captured on the way out. Plus, in the process of that spark going from one end to the next, you get what's called the doggone it. What the heck they call that? When the energy's shooting across, it's actually dragging energy in with it. What the heck they call it, man? Ugh. It's frustrating. I hate it when my mind does that. But
it's
Venturi effect.
It's the Venturi effect electrically.
Yeah, electrical. That's Venturi effect. It's actually dragging energy in with it while that spark is building up. Because every time there's a spark, you can put the back of your hand near that spark gap, and you can feel an ionic wind being generated right before that snap, before that power goes across there.
Well, I mean, how cool is it to look at water in the Venturi effect? It gets, like, super cooled because of all the way the water's flowing on each other. It's a pretty amazing aspect of the way that the world works physically, and I think it has to do with, like, almost like a super geometry or the fractal kind of idea that once you've tapped into that wavelength, you start resonating with nature's pattern.
But a rotary,
and I think once we resonate with nature's pattern, then I think Tesla knew about that. He'd always talked about that kind of stuff in some of his books, and it's like, that's a little bit far beyond my understanding.
A rotary spark gap will give you the opportunity to control via the RPM the timing of when those sparks are hitting. So I did a video called Rotary Spark Gap where I tried to explain in there of, you know, whenever this thing's opening and closing, at really low RPMs, you give it time to build up current. At higher RPMs, you're building up the voltage, and so you can bring up the frequency by how fast you spin it, or you can bring it down really low to bring the current up. So you want that full expansion of the magnetic field, and you want to give it time to fully collapse, to allow all that energy to come back this direction. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's how Russ is, when he was building that commutator that he built, that's why I was trying to talk to him about that, because there are other methods to build it that they won't burn themselves up. That's the point. And even Raymond and Jermaine right now is working on his two-stage oscillator, and they were getting a big old spark from the contacts every time that deal. And I said, you know, your contacts keep burning up. In the old days, in the point systems, they used to use a condenser to absorb that spark so that it wouldn't burn up the points real fast. You can do the same thing. You can either bleed it off in a dummy load such as a fluorescent bulb to light the, every time that spark hit goes across there, it lights up the light bulb, or you can actually store it into a bank and you got usable power out the other end. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I mean, look at the Bettini motor. Whenever you take your load off, what happens? The neon bulb lights up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That neon bulb can suck up a lot of extra energy.
Yeah, but it's also visible light, so it also produces heat as well. So that's why I keep talking about the plasma reactor.
Well, you're right. I mean, for as much as the technology is cold, like usually if you make a machine that like gets cold as it's operating, that means that you got a hell of a DC pulse going on.
Yeah.
And then you're right, that cold activity will light and make heat in a bulb. I've seen it. You know, we've all seen it on the Bettini machine.
Yep.
It does that. And so it's like, well, that's pretty interesting, because that aspect alone, just like creating a circuit that oscillates that starts getting really cold. I mean, you can make circuits that oscillate and they'll put frost on a battery, you know, and like the battery gets so cold, you can see some condensation on it. I mean, that's an interesting experiment in itself that I think people that have messed around with,
well, what should be
playing
done,
with battery.
What should be done is that somebody takes the doggone Bettini circuit that you normally hook up, and they go out and put it on a PCB board and start selling it or distributing it to researchers to run different coil systems and experiment with it. But if it's in a nifty little package and they got a general understanding how to hook this thing up, you know, electronics these days are getting really inexpensive. And the research could go so much further if it was so easy, like even the Slayer exciter circuit that only has like three parts on it. You know, it's got a diode, it's got a tip 42C transistor. They can use other transistors, but that's the one that I first messed with. And it's got a resistor, and that's it. And then the coil system, the primary and the secondary. It's a miniaturized version of the Tesla coil, but you can get all kinds of frequency ranges and do a wireless transmission. But that energy at that frequency range is capable of energizing any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. So if you made a miniaturized PCB board of it that would be simple enough to hook up to a 9-volt battery to test on different deals, you could get more people researching on the same thing, because it's a standard model and it's already proven technology. Anyway,
I like that idea.
We're down to the wire, but if we could get people to put the Bettini circuits on a PCB board, and the Slayer exciter circuits, and all these different ones, Lid Motor, he does a lot of stuff that Jeep Bluer does, and so I like watching them videos, because they have all kinds of you know, possibilities. I must have lost. Did I lose you there?
I'm here.
No, okay. Anyway, if you put all these circuits down on a PCB board, and heck, you could probably make you some money just selling them to people who's interested in researching the project, and it's already a done deal. It'll save them some time trying to figure it out and speed the process up in the research. But everything that I talk about here, these scientists, that so-called mainstream scientists, they're not doing any good for, they're just hindering. The corporations, they're doing a lot of good. They're making a lot of products. There's a lot of medical advancements, but it's on their terms. It's on their money. And that's why when you go to the doctor, you pay a lot of money for lousy service. If you go to get your cancer treated, they want to radiate you instead of using other technologies such as hyperbaric oxygen treatment that can do the same job with no damage to your body. There's all kinds of alternative medicines out there, all types of alternative food sources. There's all kinds of alternative energy sources. There's tons and tons and tons of stuff to make the equivalents of crude oil, make biofuels out of just about anything you can possibly imagine, grass clippings, old leaves off the tree, and trash. So if the people want this world to be better, if they're tired of paying all these ridiculous energy prices, and if they're tired of getting lousy service at medical facilities and paying astronomical, it'll run you in a poorhouse if you ever have to go to the doctor and you ain't got insurance. So when you guys and gals out there get tired of that, then that's when you need to come to the table with us. Everybody and his brother come to the table, and we put all this information that's already available. Steven's already gathered up tons and tons of links that's connected to this page. We got tons of people that are willing to come on here and talk with you, and we can put ideas together. We got this amazing version of Skype that you can actually have video conferencing. We can have lab looking in the lab and working troubleshooting. That's why the virtual labs idea that I kept talking about, we never did finally get that going. But Mark Brash,
we are talking about it right now. Yep. I mean, if the idea of the Bedini on the PCB board could get out there a little bit, we would all have that tool to start using in our lab together and create that virtual toolbox, you know?
Mark Brash over at Zero Fossil Fuel, he's got his own website, he's got his own chat room, he does a live stream of inside of his lab, and he'll show you things in there, and you can actually interact with him, and that's what the concept of virtual labs is, what I was talking about. But like you just mentioned a second ago, we were talking about the circuitry. All this circuitry out there, you'd be surprised. You can get on eBay.com and you can find all kinds of everything from motor controllers to you name it. And with the right ideas, you can repurpose all these different things into pulsing motors to building things, and people out there have access to 3D printers and milling machines and CNC machines and such, whatever. You get these people in contact with each other, we network together, and we can get things done. Otherwise, let NASA take care of it. Let the mainstream science guys keep telling you what's possible and what's not possible. Let the governments do what the governments do, and let everything just keep on playing out. But it is never, ever, ever going to change for the people until they realize their true capability. That's the plain and simple of it. I don't know what to say, man. You know?
I understand.
I want to see this world better, but I can't do it myself. I got a lot of brilliant ideas. I've spent years and years of researching, and I'm willing to share it with anybody who'll listen. I'll give you any idea for free. I'll share all my research with you. All I want for you to do is to take that idea and run with it and expand on it. That's all I've ever asked. And if anybody likes any of these messages or any of these shows, rebroadcast them, podcast them, chop them up, take the best of whatever you want out of it, and leave the rest. That's what the whole thing is, folks. And we got to close this show because we're way over. But I'm not trying to get rich. I'm not trying to get famous, and I'm not trying to get popular. I'm trying to spend what knowledge I got and what time I got to trying to put something, some sort of positive pebble in this world that'll send it off in a different direction that doesn't require you being enslaved or under the thumb of some power company. And it's all available. Every last bit of it's available. All the knowledge is right there before your fingertips and before your very eyes. But the only one that can pick it up is you. So you got any last ideas before we roll up out of here?
Well, I would think that if somebody was to truly take the idea to say, well, I want to power my house. And then you were like, anybody with the knowledge was like, well, you can do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I want to use my current circuit breaker panel because I want to use everything in my house that I use right now.
You can do it.
And it's like, okay, well, what would you need? And I would assume, in my mind, to run your average house, the first thing you would need, if you were going reverse, instead of from the beginning, you were going from the end, you would need a transformer. You would need probably a 100 amp service transformer, or whatever, KVA. You know, there's a mathematics to it. But I would assume that with that being, you know, the output of 120 volts at whatever amps it can handle, that would be the first thing you would need if you were going to try to run your house off your own oscillation, or your own primary mover, or your own whatever pulse apparatus you come up with. At the end of the day, I would think you would need that.
Well, sure.
And I think that that's easily attainable. And then from there, if somebody really wanted to run their house with electricity, they would have the one piece of equipment that you would need pretty much for sure to run that service panel.
Yep.
And then from there, do you think it's possible, or does the people out there in the world think it's possible that that transformer can generate electricity without a whole lot going into it, as we would call, like, you know, a whole lot of straight current going into it to get straight current out of it.
Yep.
And I would assume in my research that, like, no, you wouldn't need a whole lot of current going in to make, you know, a whole lot of current coming out.
Well, what they do from the power company is they ramp the voltage way up at a higher frequency than your house can handle. Your house would catch fire the moment that, if you had that wire straight into your house without that transformer, it'd set your house on fire right out of the gate. There's a lot of power coming down there. They have to bring it down to that transformer, store it inside that transformer, because it's actually a built-in capacitor inside that transformer, and they use the coils and the windings and all the mathematics to step that voltage down to a safe service that you can use in your house. All you got to know is how energy travels. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're pulsing this at a high frequency and you're storing it in a capacitor, you can do the mathematics and you can figure out how many transistors it would actually take. I mean, you go look at your average inverter, tear one apart and figure out what's going on inside that inverter. There's a lot of transistors inside there that are pulsing coils, and they're doing it in time to take DC current into AC current. And you can take it vice versa. You can take AC into DC. But nonetheless, the technology is available. It's ready whenever you're ready to use it. So if people want to get off the power grid, first they're going to have to start pulling resources with one another in order to do that. Plus, you're going to have somebody who may be not into electronics or whatever, do all the whatever it takes with the local town councils to keep them off your back and their local legislations and laws and rules and regulations in order to keep you from going off the power grid. See, the hypocrisy.
May I ask you, you don't make it a secret when you say when you're going off in style, and I appreciate
right.
that. Like I like your energy level on that. But I'm wondering, so when you go off in style, will you use a transformer at one to run your standard, you know, will you be using a transformer? I mean, do you see the need in that, or
I'm definitely going to be using a custom transformer, because even a capacitor in itself is a transformer. You're transforming an energy from one frequency range, and you're packing it in there into pressure and power. So if you take a Tesla coil and you charge up an 800 microfarad capacitor, whereas before that didn't have the energy to run anything standard, but once it's in that container, now it's pressurized and it's capable of, you can use a capacitor as a battery. So you transform that energy from this high frequency to a usable power again. Now, if I want to step that power down using the same type of system, when I'm bringing that frequency in, I can bring that frequency back down to a usable frequency and step it down and charge that capacitor at the same exact time. So yeah, that's part of the whole entire system. But the thing about it is, when I do that, everyone and his brother out there is going to know exactly how I did it and how they can do it as well at the same exact time. So that once the Pandora's box is open, there ain't no way of taking back that idea. You can kill the person, but you can't kill an idea. And that's
I like the idea of what you're saying about how the inverter works and how the digital inverter works with the pulsing of the transistors to get the waveform.
Yep.
And you know, if you think about it, that's not very difficult to achieve.
Nope. You got more.
I mean, the difficulty, in my opinion, would be the preciseness. Like, I would assume that all the coils need to be the same length or the same, you know, I would assume that you would need, and then the timing, the preciseness of your timing.
Well, if you want to be able to use one as a receiver and one as a transmitter, they have to be, you know, tuned to each other. But if you don't care about tuning, if you just want to use what I would classify as junk energy, they say you can't do nothing with high voltage, high frequencies, not enough power in it, which is a big lie because there's a lot of heat involved in there, and heat is energy. And so when you're energizing gas into the fourth state of matter, you're producing a massive amount of heat. You're basically got the equivalence of a sun in a vacuum. And so you can do a lot of stuff with that heat energy. See, We're using it all backwards. We're pushing too much power, too much current through transformers, and it's causing us to get a lot of heat, which is what we don't want, because it'll cause everything to reach its thermal breakdown. But what if you go from the opposite direction and you decide you're going to use heat as your initial power source? Do you realize how easy it is to generate heat? It's ridiculously easy to generate heat. Because every time you use any type of energy, you generate heat. There's always some sort of friction. There's always some sort of loss involved in it that causes heat. So if heat is something that you're trying to get rid of, like in the internal combustion engine, if there was ever a proof of over unity, the internal combustion would be the one. Because any average internal combustion engine runs at anywhere from 160 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, and if you don't have a cooling system to pull that energy away from that engine will literally destroy itself. And so there's a whole lot of energy involved in an internal combustion engine. And if the person decided they wanted to use that generator instead of just for producing electricity, but to heat their house as well, you get two uses out of one. Plus, you make that generator last longer because you're pulling that heat away from that generator. Imagine if you took the water jacket of your generator and you run it through a heater core, and then you use that to heat your house with. And then you use basic science, which tells you the heat rises. So you put your heater in the floor, you put your air conditioner in the ceiling, and so now you're more efficient. But you're using that generator that is already generating heat, which is normally waste energy, that now is heating your house and you're getting electricity, so you don't have to use any of that electricity for the heating source, with exception of maybe a fan. And if you understand about convection, you can actually get that the heat to recirculate itself by using the cold air and the hot air mix to basically spin that air around into your house. And so you can take any average generator, and you can take that generator and you can maximize its performance. And by taking that heat away from it, that oil will not lose its viscosity as rapidly. If you can keep it down below the thermal breakdown of that oil, then those parts will never fail. And from that point on, all it is just adding to the efficiency of the system. But one gasoline generator, a diesel generator, whichever, diesel's a good engine because the fuel actually lubricates the pistons. And so diesel engine would probably be the best. You take that diesel engine and you use the heat, the water jacket, instead of having a radiator on it, you use that as a heat source. Go look at your average school bus. Those things are so poorly insulated, and during the winter time, it takes a long time to get them up to temperature, but once you get them up to temperature, they will run you out of there. In the dead of winter, ice out and everything, you'll have to roll the windows down or turn the heater off. Because that's how incredible amount of energy that it would have been wasted otherwise. During the summertime, you don't want that. But you could turn that heat into pressure and turn that pressure into cold air. So, there's the deal, man. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, look. I love the way your mind works. You're a deep thinker.
Well, folks, we got to get out of here. We're way over. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. If you like anything on this podcast, please share it around. Bring some people to the table. If you know any alternative energy researchers that want to come out here and do the deal, then let's get it done. I'm just frustrated because I see where we could be. I see where we're at. And I see where we're going. And there's a lot of people complaining, but very few people doing anything about it. And so if we have solutions, we brought the solutions to the table. If nobody runs and uses them, then, you know, I got to keep shouting about it. That's what mad science is all about. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.